So I think we'll have that aspect now.
Okay, I guess that's working.
Let's start with a quick recap of yesterday. And who has some burning questions overnight as you're reviewing your notes? You have no idea what's happening. Nobody? No? Go ahead.
What exactly is Google Analytics and how do you use it?
Okay. And what is Google Analytics? I'm going to give you the overview of how to use it and what buttons to push and stuff is something that's more useful on a webinar or something. So you're back home and we're all kind of doing it from distance. What Google Analytics is it's a very powerful online tracking data package that Google gives away for free. And is an interesting aside, there's a very interesting book about Google, Beyond the Plex or something like that. And they're giving it away for free because when they bought the company and they rejiggered the whole thing, they couldn't figure out how to get people to actually pay for it, so they decided to give away what the hell, which tells you a little how dysfunctional Google is in a lot of ways. But if you go into, like when you're buying pay-per-click, you go in and there will be options in there. And again, we'll do how to push the buttons for, you know, how to actually use it. As a follow-up to this. But it lets you do things like this, okay? Is it lets you define pages by the URL, because every page in your website has a unique URL, right? So it lets you define pages to get stats on, right? So if you have a web page that's, let's say it's a landing page, which is a concept we touched upon, but didn't spend much time. But the concept of a landing page is very important as opposed to your main page, right? Is if I were, in the example yesterday, going out and buying pay-per-click and doing sites for how to make massive improvements in a child with ADD to have them do better at school and all other places. So I'm doing that. I don't want to then take them to your general school page. I want to take them to a page that's very specific, right? Some of you are doing like Taekwondo, Krav, and kickboxing, and we can have a conversation about whether that's smart or dumb, but if you're doing multiple kind of different things, you wouldn't want to go either for search engine or paid advertising, land them on a page that shows all of them. If they're looking for something like Krav, you'd want to take them to a page that only shows Krav, and then is a smooth process, right? But Google Analytics will let you say, go in and say, here's my landing page, which is presumably the one with the opt-in, right? Here's my success page after they've opted in. So therefore, we know they opted in order to get to this page, right? And then here is my page that is success page after, say, they made an online appointment. So let's say that's our funnel or our steps. So Google Analytics will you can define the landing page, the success page, and then the follow-on success page. And then it'll give you numbers of, we had, pick a number, 100 people at the landing page. We had 35 of them get to the success page from the opt-in. And we had 12 of them make an appointment, right? So the success page from the appointment page. So it'll then track all that stuff for you, right? Google also tracks for you how many people showed up at your page and how they got there, right? So what, and part of the reason that's important because we heard a lot of very non-specific conversation yesterday from people saying, like, most of our traffic comes from our website, but really what they meant is most of our traffic comes from referrals and advertising, and they go to the website and they opt in, right? So sometimes that's really what they meant. And Google, in the analytics, will tell you how many people went and typed in your URL, or how many people went and typed in your name in Google, which is essentially the same thing, right? A lot of people don't type it into the bar, they type it into Google, in essence, to search for the website, because they just don't know any better. right? And then they end up at your website because that's what they're looking for, right? So those numbers tell you they saw you somewhere else, already knew what your website was. Then it'll also tell you how many got to you by Googling, right, typing in your school name, which meant they knew about you somewhere else and they were looking for it. And it'll also tell you how many people got there by typing in a variety of other keywords, right? It'll also tell you how many got there from AOL and how many got there from Yahoo and how many got there from other sources so that you can get a sense of, we have half the people showing up at our website because they're looking for us, half the people showing up at our website because they were searching for martial arts lessons and now it's organic search. And then, of course, with pay-per-click, they keep really good stats on how many people clicked on what search terms and showed up at the site. Does that make sense? So it's a very robust tool for tracking anything up to it goes offline. But Google also now is very good within analytics and within their pay-per-click advertising of they can assign a phone number. And now they can track how many people called that phone number, right? So you can do pay-per-click and various type of advertising with Google using a phone number. And, you know, it's an offshoot of like Google Voice, right? So they will assign a phone number and then track the number of calls that came through that number. Now, they don't have the ability yet to know what happened after the person called the phone, right? So they can't tell you you had 10 calls and you made 9 appointments. All they know is you had 10 calls from this source, right? So it's a very robust tracking tool, right? And again, you know, in this form, it'd be difficult to do what buttons you click and so forth, right? But, I mean, if you just Google Analytics, it'll take you there, right? Or if you're logged in already to buy pay-per-click, it'll have all the menus there. Does that make sense?
For many pages, is it recommended to start a whole completely different URL or just build it off your existing site?
You know, there's... Let's do the short version of it, right? I have a tendency to do complete new URLs for a variety of reasons that isn't necessary. What is extremely necessary is to have whatever they're looking for be what they see when they show up and not have to have them sort through a whole bunch of stuff, right? Again, if you're buying pay-per-click, in your case, for Tybo, right? If you're buying pay-per-click for Tybo, you want to take them to your Tybo page. You don't want to take them to your general school page that shows them everything else, right? If you're buying pay-per-click or whatever else it is or newspaper ads, and part of my reason for answering that way is I tend to be very much of I want to be able to drive them that to site no matter what I'm doing, right? So instead of having a convoluted link that is easy to put in pay-per-click, I want to have an easy-to-remember link that we can put in a magazine, put in a ValPak, put on the front door, and buy pay-per-click, etc., right? So I always tend to think more globally about anything I do online as I'm doing it, rather than having to reinvent the wheel, right? You can do it the other way, which is you can put a subdomain in your site, and then you can buy another domain and point it at that later if you need to, right? So, you know, like all the stuff that we do for Mile High Karate and I do for NAPNA and Inner Circle and so forth, all tend to go get a new one, privatecoachingsession.com, rather than NAPNA.com/whatever. And it's one of the things Merrick and Toby and I kind of battle about. It's like, no, I want a new one, right? Well, why don't we just use this one? No, because I want to be able to tell them or voicemail them or text them or whatever and have them go there, right? So I prefer, and I think it's probably a pretty good strategy, because they're damn cheap. Just go get another domain, host a different domain. And I ended up with that habit because in the old days of search engine optimization, not necessarily current, in the old days of search engine optimization, we had hundreds of different sites, right, to do that. Nowadays, Google doesn't let you get away with that as much, right? A little bit, but not as much. But it's useful from a comprehensive, because if it's going to cost you $10 or something like that to get a new domain, and as long as you can come up with something that's easy for people to remember and type in, then I prefer to go with new domains. Okay. Like even Mile High Karate, we have milehighkarate.com, but it's really designed as students and general information and so forth. We never send prospects there. everything we send prospects to is freekarate.com. But then there's subdomains within that, and I'd rather send the parents to the kids section of that. And I forget what it is, but it's freekarate.com/children or kids or something like that. Other questions from yesterday, or just anything you're confused about?
I would say one thing yeah, I think you mentioned on that, if you've got a lot of good traffic, if you know you've got a lot of good traffic on your main URL, and that's where you want to send prospects, and that's what you've been using, you might choose to move your student site to a separate URL, apply a new URL for your students,
right,
and then use the primary URL, like mine's karatebuilt.com, and that's what I use for prospects. If I had done have students like there, and I set prospects, it was a really well-indexed site, I would want to use that one for my prospects and buy another one.
Move the students somewhere else.
Yeah, move the students. And for most of you, that's probably you've got this. Most of you all have this site that kind of tries to do everything.
Yeah.
And you should move your students somewhere else because that's not, that's...
Yeah, the trying to do everything is always a bad idea. And I hate to ever say everyone because you're always wrong when you, that definitive, right? But... it's very rare that I ever talk to anybody as a school operator who doesn't try to throw everything into one page, right? They want to have a URL that's a school name, and here's the stuff of the students, and here's pictures of our last event, and here's the class schedule, and here's all this other stuff, and it's a complete cluster from a standpoint of being able to make a sale, right? And everything that we're focusing on this weekend is not how to give access to your students to go register for the seminar. It's how to drive new students, right? And so from a standpoint of driving new students, you wouldn't bring an intro in and give them all that other stuff, right? I mean, you might walk them through and say, here's the last event and here's why that was cool, but you wouldn't let them on their own devices come in and watch the sparring class and see the pictures from the tournament and browse through the class schedule they don't understand and all that stuff. And certainly on an info call, you wouldn't interrupt they say, well, I got this ad and I want to come in for free lessons. They say, well, here, I'd like to read off the class schedule for you for a minute. And then if I can tell you about the upcoming championships that our brown belts are going to compete in. And by the way, can I give you our bio? You wouldn't do that, right? See, I mean, the landing page for prospects is just an info call. And you want to give them just enough information to get information and then enough information beyond that to get them either make an appointment online or call you to make an appointment, right? And I prefer them to call me, but either way, I want an appointment. Does that make sense? So it's actually
fill out the form in the one site. Remember, the opt-in order is fill out the form and then set the appointment. So provide enough information so we can follow up and then fill out the form. But Master Oliver, the other thing you mentioned is Facebook and all that kind of stuff on your landing page.
Oh yeah. See, that's... Let's think about it this way. You've always got to decide what the purpose is of everything you do, right? See, my purpose of teaching an intro is to get you excited enough that you're willing to enroll. And so let's say, give me $600 and $250 a month for 12 months, right? That's my outcome. But it's also to foreshadow that really you're going to train with this, be a black belt, and there's stuff to come, and we're going to qualify you for that in the process, right? So the intro enrollment process has that outcome, right? It's not to prep you for sparring. It's not to teach you about tournaments. It's not to teach you about the self-defense thing that's going on. It's not to teach you about any of that stuff. It's to get you committed enough today to give me a check, sign your contract, and prepped enough so that it makes the next sale easy. That make sense? Your web page, the only purpose of the web page is to get them to make an appointment for which they're likely to show up for that intro, right? That's it. And there's an intermediate step, which is to tell me I'm a little bit interested, but I'm not quite ready to talk to a salesman, because that's the way they think about it, right? I'm a little bit interested, I'd like you to educate me more, give me more information, give me free stuff, but I'm not quite ready to be sold. Because see, that's the way the prospects think about it, right? I pick up the phone and call you, what do I expect? You're going to try to sell me on doing this thing, and I'm going to have to say yes or no, and I don't like to make decisions. See, that's the hesitation people have at the intermediate. So the web page can cut the difference, and it can get them to give you an email and a phone number so you can educate them more, and then you can educate them more in the next step and see if you get them to a point of comfortable to, like, anonymously sort of make an appointment to come in next week online or pick up the phone and get their questions answered. Does that make sense? Everything else on the prospect page is irrelevant. And anything that gets in the way of that is a distraction. Does that make sense? And see, there's a... And here's the other point of conflict. See, there's stuff you want the students to see. There's stuff you want the parents to see. There's stuff you want the prospect to see. And there's also stuff you want the search engine to see in order to get them there that isn't necessarily the same stuff you want the prospect to see. Right? And so part of the logic can be building a bunch of stuff that's really designed for the search engines to find and then funnel them back into that landing page. Does that make sense to everybody? And so don't get so bogged down in this that we end up with a page that doesn't convert at a high level, right? And convert at a high level, like we're talking about with the analytics, is prospects to opt-in. Opt-in to contact to appointment. Does that make sense to everybody? And ultimately, the appointment almost always happens because you pick up the phone and call them, or they pick up the phone and call you, right? And trying to just automate it, just have text messages, just have voicemails, all that stuff, misses the fact that until a human being is talking to a human being, either in the school or on the phone, the next steps aren't going to happen. Right? So always know that the quicker you can move it offline, online, offline, or online, online, offline, the better off you are. Is that making sense? Okay.
And Google Analytics is what you can use to track all those numbers down the line.
It gets here to here to here, doesn't know about this. Right? Unless that's online. Because if they made the appointment online, it can go here, 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 because it's a success page if they did it themselves. Right? But it can know that they picked up a phone.
What's your thought on the web pages that are solely set up to sell intro packages?
As like the full contact marketing ones that are they're designed to sell a $29 package.
Right.
As opposed to
this.
I don't think there's any difference. What do you see as different?
He's saying selling it for $29 online and you get the bag looks like they're doing with full contact marketing versus a lot of other ones are doing, which is to have an opt-in page where they get a free report or free something and then they get asked for it.
Oh, I always want to have an intermediate step. Always want to have an intermediate step. I always want to have something that they can do to give me information before they're ready to give me a credit card. Okay? So if you don't have an intermediate step, you're forcing a buy, no buy decision too prematurely. Okay? So you always want to have that intermediate step. Then the other question is, should you force everybody to put a credit card in online? Or do you want them to call you and interact in some other way? I want them to make an appointment for a paid or unpaid intro, however we're doing it at the time, in whatever way is most efficient. And the stats show this. It's going to be 300 to 400% more likely that they're going to give you money and make the sale if you're talking to them rather than if it's just a web form.
I think the other thing about the way those pages are set up is they're not designed to give you, the school owner, you've got to be careful. If I take the intermediate step, and I think Simon mentioned about they just got their email address. That was the only thing that was captured. So the only thing that could happen later on was follow-up email, which you're out of control of. In that case, I think. So what you want them to be able to do is give you phone, email, and contact information. Then if the next step was to pay with a credit card, that would be okay because now you can at least follow up with them person to person. If they choose not to enter the credit card, the problem with a system where it comes into a landing page and then pretty much forces you to buy the lessons online is you lose the opportunity to interact, and now they're scared off because the only way for them to interact with you is to buy.
Well, and there's a lot of circular logic that goes on, right? And you, with I don't know specifically what you're talking about there, the company, but there are a lot of people out in the industry, and some of them are very smart, But they'll say the only way to do it is have them just buy it online, do the paid intro, and a much higher percentage of the ones who pay for an intro are going to show up. Well, that's circular logic. And you know why it's circular logic? Is, yes, a lot higher percentage of those who give you a credit card are going to show up. That's a true statement on the face of it. But the real question is percent that show up at your page, that get your contact information that you can follow up forever, that then take an action of some sort to make an appointment, that then show up, right? So there's more steps than that. And if you put a barrier up there so that let's say instead of getting 4 or 5 out of 10 to give you contact information, you get 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 15 to give you a credit card, but all the others you have no contact information. Now you've lost the ability to proactively market to all of those others for the rest of their life unless they happen to come back, right? And we know from experience that an awful lot of sales aren't made on the knee-jerk reaction of I'm going to go research this because they didn't get distracted. It comes from continuing to drip on them and to drip on them in as many different ways as possible, right? So if I had my druthers, I always like a paid intro over a free intro. And if I had my druthers, I'd rather have a credit card up front than not have a credit card up front. And if I had my druthers, I'd be talking to them face-to-face, belly-to-belly, than on the phone. And if I'd be talking to them on the phone rather than having them interact with the website, and there's no human being there, okay? And there are systems, which I've never really gotten to work, where you can proactively go initiate chat with them online, right? And so you can do chat boxes, and they're chatting with you online. You can do boxes that initiates them to do a computer phone call. I believe in our market, we're still most efficient of here's the phone number, call us right now, or you give me the phone number and I call you, right? The other side of the argument, what Master Moody was saying, is this, is it's a very legitimate debate. Do I just want email address? Do I want email address plus name? Do I want email address plus name plus phone number, right? And some very sharp internet marketers have said, why bother with a name? All the name lets me do is personalize the email, and you know they're kind of over that anymore anyway, right? And maybe that's a valid argument, because the more information you ask for, it's going to ding the opt-in rate somewhat, right? So, but I tend to, even within that, I tend to end up with name, email, phone, because I just am like over email at this point. And I don't mean that it's not useful. I don't mean that it doesn't work a little bit, and I don't mean you shouldn't do a ton of it. But what I do mean is it's, you know, compared to what, you know, 10 years ago when I was the guru of email in the industry, and I sent you that old book from 2001, I think. But, you know, it went from, you know, like the movie, you've got mail and people are sitting around to see what their email is, and oh my God, I've got to check my damn email, and there's 100 things in there, and you know, the hell with it, I'm going to delete everything, right? I mean, that's the shift that has gone on over the last 10, 12 years with email, right? So if you're dependent purely on email, you're in a slowly dying media, and certainly in a media that's shifting to being a work tool, but not something that people use to interactively with a lot.
So it might be okay, in other words, I can say it's a different way, that it's okay to take the hit on providing more information. The more information they provide, the less likely that people go on the page, but I'm willing to take that hit to get the phone number, because the email, I know I'm probably only going to get 20% of them delivered.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm dropping, you know, 5 times as many. I'm only going to get 1 out of 5 ones that I can really interact with later if I only get email. Even if the response rate goes up, it would have to go 5 times for me to make that work. But then,
I'm not sure your numbers work right, but just if you, I agree, and it's something you can experiment with Google Analytics, you can A/B split it easily if you want to. But with a phone number, I can initiate a phone call, I can text them, and I can send voicemails. And I can automate text, and I can automate voicemails, and I can have a human being watching for the opt-in and talk to them, preferably while they're on the website. So the conversion rate to now an appointment is astronomically higher if I get hold of you sometime around when you're looking at the web page, or if I can get you to call me. Right. Does that answer that question?
I think so. Are there people that are selling intros over the telephone then? Having them pay when they make an appointment?
Okay, so now that's the conversation about paid intros. I'm sure there are. I mean, and it's no different than give me a credit card for online, right? And in fact, people are a little less security concerned on putting a web page, I mean, giving it to you over the phone than online.
They're doing
that online.
But with the phone, we notice the conversion rate's a little bit lower. They've already paid, so they've already made one transaction. You know, so that may be why it's
sale. I mean, this could be a long analytic discussion, but to give it the short version is usually, not always, you'll get more intro traffic with a free offer than you will with a paid offer. Usually, but not always, you'll have a higher show rate and a higher conversion rate with a paid offer than you will with a free offer. So those two have to balance a little bit. Does that make sense? You certainly have a higher show rate. The conversion rate from paid intro to enrollment is inversely related to how long they paid for as the intro offer. So if I gave you a credit card for $149 for 3 months, that's a harder one to convert to a normal, like, one-year enrollment than it is if I paid you for a week or two or two lessons or something like that. So again, that goes in inverse proportion of how difficult it is to flip it based upon how long the intro offer was to begin with, right? So you have to weigh all those factors. You know, over the years, Master Moody, Master Smith, and I have done every iteration, right? I heard somebody recently saying every info call that comes in, we tell them to go to their computer and pay online because they have to register online before they can come in. That's the dumbest advice I've ever heard.
Yeah,
okay? I've got somebody on the phone. I want to make the sale on the phone. And if the sale is an appointment to come in and I get all the contact information, or if the appointment is an appointment to come in for an introductory that's $19.95 and you're going to give me a credit card or the phone to hold the space, either one, I want to make the sale right then. I never want to send them back somewhere. It's the other thing we started, you mentioned this message, but we never got to it, is like the Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all that stuff. See, I see a lot of people taking this landing page, and of course, usually it's not a landing page, it's just a school web page. So you get a prospect to the page, and then they're trying to take it to Facebook. No. I mean, the only purpose of Facebook is to do what? Get them to the website. The only purpose of the website is to get them to contact you and make an appointment. So you don't go the opposite way, right? It'd be like taking them to... I used to see this a lot. Like you see a plumber's van or something like that, and they'd have a sticker that the Yellow Pages gave them that said, look us up in the Yellow Pages. Well, that's dumb. I've got the plumber's van. Why do I want to go send you to go look at my 282 competitors to track me down? Right? I mean, the Yellow Pages would give them away, right? They love the idea, and occasionally they get the guy stupid enough to do it. But you certainly don't want to online replicate that stupidity, right? You wouldn't say, okay, you're at our website, here's the link to find everybody who does martial arts in the air, right? But you also don't want to go the other way, which is, okay, go like us on Facebook. Because see, if I get them to take an action, the action I want is an email, better yet, an email phone number, better yet, email, phone number, name, better yet, email, phone number, name, address, better yet, email, phone number, name, address, and credit card. None of those preferred actions is go like me on Facebook, go follow me on Twitter, or go Google Plus me, right? Now, I want to have all that stuff. I want to have the Facebook thing, I want to have the Google Plus thing, but they're all designed to get them to the website, not vice versa, right? Now, if it's your student site, that could be different. The student site can say, hey, go like us and follow us on Facebook for updates. And by the way, click here and go follow us. That's fine.
Has anybody found a way to make Facebook function just like the website would in that regard?
So yes.
Make them go to your website necessarily?
Yes, there are plugins for Facebook that's an opt-in landing page. So, again, that's now a little too technical as a group, but there are plugins that you can do on Facebook. So you put your Facebook page up, and it has a landing page opt-in just like the website. And now you don't have to shift them over to the web. That's a really good question. So you're exactly right.
And didn't Master Melroy make a video of how to do it?
He made a
tutorial.
And that's online.
So you can look and they'll tell you how to do it. It's a really cool
video. Yeah, we have a whole series of webinars that we did last year and over the year on all the technical components, everything from how to build your own WordPress site to landing pages on Facebook, to also how to load all your prospect list up on Facebook and then show up, which is a really cool addition. That's all up there.
One thing you want to be careful of, just as a warning, a lot of times we talk to some school owners and they say, well, I got a student that's building a website. You know, or something like that. And almost all the students that want to build a web page, they might even have be developers, they might be professionals in the computer industry. But a lot of those guys won't want you to put Facebook and Twitter and all that on your page. They'll say, oh, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. Of course you want to have Facebook on your page, of course. So just listen to what Master Oliver's telling you. That, you know, now you understand the logic of why you wouldn't want it there on your prospect landing page, but don't let somebody else talk you out of it later. You know, because they're an expert in the computer. That's what's tough for us because we're, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to design my own, I don't want to do all the coding for a web page and learn how to do that. And so you hire somebody to do it or you have somebody help you with it. And you still got to manage it by the rules that you're hearing.
Yeah.
They'll argue, right? They'll be like, no, but I, or, you know, so there's a lot of stuff. You got to be kind of careful about that. You need to have it the way that you dictate or that you're designed.
And that's part of why we've been working with GoTo Karate and a few others and trying to get some preferred providers who either follow the format or who may be using a slightly different format, but they're a good parallel addition as well. You had a question.
So, well, I was just kind of a question, but he answered it earlier, but wanted to make a statement. And I think what you said was, it's always better if we have that intermediate staff.
Yes.
It's always better to talk to a person.
It is.
And if you've got staff or yourself that's good on the phone, you can find out more information from that prospective student that will help you in the intro.
Exactly.
That you're not going to get by asking them a bunch of questions on an email.
Yeah, web pages don't build rapport with human beings.
Right.
And the sale is a human-to-human interaction.
Right. And I don't think we need not to forget that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, there's a certain amount we can automate, and there's a certain amount of personalizing the automation to make it look like it's coming from a human, right? But ultimately, it doesn't replace, you're going to have a one-on-one sale. You wouldn't walk them in the school and say, there's the ATM, go choose your options and put a credit card in. And I got to tell you, as a multi-school operator for many years, I've often longed for the day. There's a video playing on the front of the screen. You guys follow that. And there's the credit card machine on the wall, and here are the options. You know, if I could have ever figured out a way to take them through and make the enrollment sale online before they ever showed up so a human being couldn't screw it up, I would have done it. But you're never going to get out of that piece of interaction.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Not to sound too, what's the right word, jaded about the whole idea of employees, but it gets there.
Let's ask, you know, just to clarify something Master Oliver said, there's been some talk I've heard about having a web page where they pay online, then once they call, to send them to the page before the appointment. I know he mentioned that, but just to be clear, that's really not a very good idea. You need to set the appointment. Don't send them away. It'd be like the same exact thing like you're saying. You've got them on the phone. Your job is to get the appointment, not to send them to another web page.
Well,
if the argument is it'll increase your show rate, which sure, it'll lower the total volume of people that'll come in. So you'll have a lot of
Mrs. Jones is sitting at work and you say, oh, that's fantastic, you want to bring Joey in for an introductory class, go to www, register online, make an appointment, we look forward to seeing you. Well, anybody tells me that when I'm ready to buy, you know, God knows I'm even going to remember it next time I get to my laptop, right?
Right, so some lower percentage will fill that out. But the confusion is, though, everybody who fills it out probably shows up, or a lot of them show up. But if you have 100 people call, only maybe 50% or
20%. Well, I don't know. I've got a cross school in D.C. It's
here.
Yeah, no, not you. Minton.
What are you trying to figure?
The other cross school in
Nick.
Nick, yeah. Nick's problem is all of his intros are paid online, but his show ratio is crappy. So they're all registering online, they're all paying online, but he's only getting about a third of them to show up even after they give a credit card there.
Okay.
right? So it's not a deadlock that even if they put a credit card online, they're going to show up. I mean, you know, all the online marketers, paid or for free, their problem with webinars is they get a 25% show rate. So they have to keep beating you to death. You know, their problem with selling online products is that nobody goes and uses it. Frankly, our you know, I mean, we've gradually eked into making most of stuff digitally delivered, but now we have to do a whole bunch of crap to remind you that it's there, right? So now you're getting emails constantly about this new thing, this new thing, this new thing, and postcards and all that stuff, because you can't just put a web page up and expect people are going to go there and remember it, right? And Greg, let me tweak something from what you just said. See, like, if you look at what we're doing with Online Karate, our objective would be to take offline advertising, online advertising, get them to show up at freekarate.com or to the specific, let's say, kids landing page within that, if it's appropriate, get information, in other words, email, phone number, name, turn that into a call, and after they get information, we're going to give them a lot more information about it, but ultimately we want to turn that into a call. Then at the call, we want to make an appointment for an intro. And then after we've made the appointment, we send them back to a web page to learn more about the program before they show up so they're educated ahead of time, right? So we take them to, you're welcome to look at it, smilehighkarate.com/first lesson. And it's then designed to give them time to educate themselves about what the program is all about before they show up. It doesn't actually try to sell them anything, right? But what you were saying is, don't have an info call and say the only way you can come in is if you go back to our webpage and put a credit card in and make an appointment online because I can't handle that with you. I had that happen to me, by the way. We had some event and I had an appointment for a haircut. And so and the hair salons are usually the worst. I mean, I'm sure visual changes as all this stuff nailed. But I call and they say, well, we can't make another appointment for you right now. You could call our other place or you go to the website. Well, a month later, I'm still going, oh, yeah, I never got in there, right? Where it would have been, like, for tomorrow, because it was just a conflict that day because the plane was running late or something. But you don't want to do that because then you just lose a lot of sales. I mean, the thing that you're battling in today's society, and it's, you know, I always hate to say that today is different than 20 years ago, different than 50 years ago, but the curve has been there's more distractions. There are more confusions. There's more different communications channels, and so it's harder and harder and harder to get their attention, right? I mean, what are people doing? They're on their laptop. They're putzing around with their smartphone. They're walking through traffic, checking their their Facebook feed and their Twitter feed, and then they get home and they've got I've got DirecTV. There's 500 damn channels. There's only 20 of them I even know what they are, right? So, if you take 50 years ago, I could advertise on the Lucy Show or, the Dick Van Dyke Show or something like that, and I got 60% of the American public in one place. Now, the networks, primetime rating in network on what's that damn singing show?
American Idol.
I mean, they're lucky if they get 5 or 10% of the TVs tuned in, and they're one of the highest rated shows in the country, right? So what's happening is you've got to hold their attention when you get it, right? And you've really got to walk them down a non-confusing path. And anything that confuses them, I mean, sales rule 101 is a confused prospect does nothing, right? And the easiest place to confuse them is online. And the place where they have the least patience is online, right? So you got to do this. Keep it simple, stupid. Don't make me search around. An example we were using, actually it was up at Sturgis with Mark Leisure, but I was giving the example. I was reading the Wall Street Journal one day, and you guys will all identify with it. I had the Wall Street Journal on my desk, the computer open, Fox News on the TV in my office, which has a view about like, what we're looking at out back at the hotel here, right, Jeff? With the 100 elk in the back. So I'm sitting in my office, and I'm on my day with back-to-back calls, right? You guys know what those days are like. Every 20 minutes of back-to-back calls. So somebody, I don't remember who, couldn't manage to organize their schedule enough to show up for their call. So I have an empty 20-minute slot. So I'm going through the Wall Street Journal, and there's this big ad, and it's like a little box or something that you stick in your house, and it's like a cell tower, right? So whatever it is, you plug it in, and all of a sudden now you have like a cell tower in your house, and if you have kind of bad reception somewhere, is it then boosts your reception, right? So I see this ad, and I go, yeah, cool, I want one of those, right? So I'm going to buy it. So they give me the URL to the page. It takes me to their corporate website. Now, I have a 20-minute slot. I'm now 12 minutes into my 20-minute slot because I've read four or five articles and I came across this ad. So I've got 8 minutes before my phone's going to ring next. And I'm trying to buy. I've already got the credit card out, and I can't figure out how to buy the thing, right? And so I'm poking around their I wanted it pretty bad. Most people are not this diligent, right? I'm kind of technical, and I understand web pages. So I'm poking around, and I'm looking at it, going, damn it, okay, where is it? And then I finally find the page that it has it, but it gives me, like, the spec documents, and it gives me all this stuff, and it doesn't tell me, if I just have a Wi-Fi connection, can I plug it in, and does it work with AT&T? That's, like, the only two questions I had, right? They could have said, who does it work with, and how does it work? And put the credit card in, and they had a sale. It wasn't cheap. It was, $300, something like that. They would have had a $300 sale. Instead, they got a no sale. For how long? Forever. Because I don't even know who they are at this point. I had 8 minutes, right? And what you see with your website is there's a lot of people who will show up that then don't do anything. Or they show up and they start clicking around. And that'll be a lot of the web guys is like, well, people like to have lots of content. They like to click around. They like to look at a lot of stuff. They'll tell you that. Well, it's complete crap when it comes to a prospect site. What you want a prospect to do is go, ooh, this is me. So a headline. You get inside the conversation already going on in their head and show them how you can solve a problem they already think they have. That's what you want. You want to get inside that conversation and have them go, ooh, this is for me. Then you go, I'd love to learn more about this, and be enticed enough, titillated enough, they give you contact information. And then give them enough other information they want to come in and try a class and meet you face-to-face. That's it, right? So, and again, you wouldn't design a print ad, if you knew what you were doing anyway, and have your school logo and name be the headline. But how many websites have the school logo and name as the headline on the page, right? Because if you look at a web page, see, if this is a web page, how long is the web page? Well, it's however long you want to make it be. It's there's an infinite amount of space, right? But all there is a screenshot, and the term is above the fold. So above the fold is just like you're looking at a newspaper, right? If there's a if you're in a newspaper and you want people to get it, you put the headline above the fold. So if they're holding the newspaper folded, they get this part, right? Above the fold on a web page means what they see in the initial screenshot, they don't want to scroll down, right? So on search results, if they have to scroll or go to other pages, they're never going to get there, right? It's kind of like the old joke. Witness protection is kind of like being on page 2 of Google, right? So, page 2, page 3 of Google, it doesn't matter. If you're not, above the fold, it doesn't matter. But you want it to be headline, get inside the conversation already going in their head, show them that you can solve a problem that they already think they have, right? And enough information, text, testimonials, and so forth, to entice them to give you email address, or preferably name, email, address, phone number, right? And that's all that page has. Doesn't take them to Facebook, doesn't take them to Twitter, doesn't ask for a credit card, doesn't do anything else. And the enticement for this oftentimes is some type of free bribe. So it's a free report, it's a free book, it's a free yada, yada, yada. A lot of you went to... The boot camp site that we put up for this event is not a good representation of what it is, because the boot camp site asked for too much information, right? It was not designed as an opt-in page, because almost everybody who ended up at the site are already on our list anyway, right? But if you go to like a private coaching session, is that's a site that just does an opt-in. If you go to freekarate.com, that's a site that all it does is ask for an opt-in. And like freekarate.com, it really has three panels. Kids, adult men, adult women. So it says, which are you? Then let's say you hit the kids page, takes you to a page that's a video and an opt-in. That's all it is. Not trying to take it to Facebook, not trying to do anything else. It's just trying to get an opt-in. Then if you opt-in, it takes you to a page that gives you a lot more information, more testimonials, more information. Gives you an option to make an appointment or puts the phone number in front of you about 822 times, right, so you can't miss it. And in our case with the schools, we just have an 800 number that automatically routes, so we don't make them search for the phone number for the individual location they're looking for. Because that's another place people get bored and go away.
Is there information or data regarding if there's videos on that first, or should videos be a little bit later in the sequence, or does it matter?
Mostly on the landing page. I mean, this is a sorting page. If I was doing pay-per-click, I'd take them straight to this, right? And really, to the greatest extent possible, I'd like them to go right to the page about kids or right to the page, right? But at that point, the data showing a short video that entices them and bribes them or whatever to give you contact information is the thing that's working the best. Okay. That book that I sent you, by the way, the only thing, I mean, that's like from 2001. But top of my head, there's only two things it says that don't work anymore, which is the search engine thing has changed quite a bit. All the concepts are right, but linking strategies are much more important, and all the other stuff about keyword stacking and all that stuff isn't important. And the other thing that I said in there is don't use video because it loads too slow, but now everybody's got a broadband connection, so that's irrelevant. And then, back then, it wasn't that video wouldn't work, it's just that the connections were so slow. If somebody's on dial-up on AOL, you know, nobody's going to sit there for 4 minutes waiting for the video to buffer in order to watch it, right? Now, almost everybody has a connection that's fast enough that it'll play streaming, right? I mean, even like Apple TV and those things, none of them store it. It all just streams live, so that just means broadband's been adopted widely enough. Other questions from yesterday? Yes, sir.
Or not from yesterday, okay. But what was the book that you sent? I guess it's Maximum Impact Network.
Oh, I sent it to you, too.
Did
it?
Was it?
I sent you, the first one, for some reason, it didn't work. So I sent it again. There were two separate links.
Okay.
One of them was Direct Response Marketing for Martial Arts Schools. Was that book I did like 11 years ago. There's nothing's changed in there. And then the other one was Use the Internet to Market Your Martial Arts School. And what's dated in there is mostly the conversation about search engines and about whether you can use video online or not. Most everything else is right, other than I refer to GoTo pay-per-click rather than Overture, rather than Google, because that's the evolution that it went through. And I also sent you a book called Autoresponder Magic that gives you all kinds of ideas and stuff with autoresponders. I also sent you a book by John Kennedy called Reason Why Advertising that's really good. What else was in there?
Brian Tracy, there was a bunch of Harvard.
Yeah, Brian Tracy book and another. Influence Science and Practice, Harvard Business Review. That's really good.
Are those online?
Yeah, I emailed it to everybody. Okay. So if you look online, I emailed you a download link.
Okay.
And actually, the first time I sent it out, for some reason, there was some protection problems that wouldn't download, so the second one is the one that was working.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. That was Wednesday. Was that Wednesday or?
Oh, right before we came.
Yeah.
Things that we could do.
Actually, it was Thursday, so it's probably while you're at the Olympic Training Center.
While we were traveling.
Yeah. You should be able, if you have an iPad, just open in your iPad, download, and you can read it in iBooks. Okay. Other questions or follow up from yesterday? Okay. You sure. Okay. Good. We had promised to cover stats. Briefly, we had also promised to cover. No, I had a question from the Netherlands. Oh, you're hiding. There you go. You're not hiding. You're in plain sight. You had a question about upgrades.
Yeah. Everything about upgrades. How to do it.
Right.
But this is not for this.
Well, let's do the short answer for a second. Right. Is keeping in mind that
there are a lot of different versions of this, but the NAPNA version that's in the can for you to use is basically you do a basic enrollment, 12 months. Some people, I kind of prefer to call it a trial enrollment, but it's a basic enrollment, or what's another word for that? For
starter
program, whatever you want to call it. But then you do Black Belt Club, and then you do leadership. With our franchise schools, we actually do basic Master Club leadership, but you know, it's just about having the tiers, right? And for NAPNA, we have Black Belt Club support materials that are available for you, and a huge and robust leadership program. That last year, Toby and Merrick and a whole slew of people spent a huge amount of time putting together. Okay, and so on the leadership fulfillment is, it's a little video every month. There's a huge poster for the wall that's full color that's designed to be printed out. That's really nice. Has anybody actually printed those out yet?
Leadership program.
Yeah. There's a big a program that has the levels. So it says basic. Black Belt Club, National Black Belt Club, leadership, right? And it shows the different levels, and it gives none of the physical curriculum, but all of the basic principles that go with it, right? And so the idea is you want to go from basic and go from there to they're committed to train to black belt and beyond. Now, there's two ways to think about this, but you know, we have some schools that are, you know, like Prov, where, you know, if you train for, you know, for 382 years, you go 82, whatever, and so forth, you might be the one black belt of the universe, right? And then we have the Brazilian guys who think it has to be 10 years and you have to whatever. And then we have the, you know, the ATA guys who in 18 months, if you paid your dues, you get your black belt. Everything. I'm just exaggerating at the same level as you do for the Prov guys. Can't just beat up on everybody else. But
how dare you speak the truth?
But in general terms, we're thinking in terms of like a college degree or like graduating from high school, right? So I tend to think this is like you enroll in college, and I want to get my bachelor's degree, and then I want to get my master's degree, and then I get my PhD. And I like to use that as a metaphor for parents because they understand it, right? So they understand this is like 4 years, and this is a couple of years, and this is like 3 years, and that's what the deal is, right? But the idea is you do the intro, you enroll them for a trial enrollment with making sure they understand that this is really the goal of the program, and this is a probationary period, a trial period, for us to evaluate you and see if you're going to qualify for the real thing, right? Okay. And, yes?
When do you make that presentation? After the sale is completed or during the sale?
Implicit all the way through the intro and the sale. And at the sale, I don't want to get detail specific enough that they start asking too many questions about this. But I want to be specific enough of, you know, obviously just like going to college, your goal is to get your bachelor's degree in doing martial arts, your goal is to get to black belt and beyond. And that's the goal, and really what we do is we start everybody with a trial enrollment, and then we evaluate to see if we feel comfortable with you following on a longer basis or not. Right?
And this is after the check sign?
No, this is, in our case, this is before the check sign. Okay. Now, I'm not going into much more detail than that. I mean, we're going, you know, the full program, and if it's a child, I'm going to say, well, Joey's 7 now. He could be a black belt when he's 11. Second-degree black belt by the time he's 13. In fact, most of the 13-year-olds end up working their way through high school and college teaching karate. Really, we're starting with a trial enrollment now. This is all on that sales boot camp online, by the way. But we're starting with a trial program right now. It's only about a quarter of the way to black belt. And that's going to let the instructors evaluate and make sure we feel comfortable with approving Joey to train the black belt. And if so, we'll approve you and qualify you in the next month or two to do that. So that's there in the presentation. And see, most of what I'm doing is I'm talking about black belt, but we're only enrolling on a trial basis. And see, what a lot of you do is it's a big deal is 12 months. And in this presentation, it's like, oh, it's only a quarter of the way of black belt, but we're just going to do a trial, see how it does. And a lot of it is like they're at the point of signing a contract and say, oh, it's 12 months?
Yeah, that's about a quarter of the way to Black Belt. Okay. Well, am I committed for 12 months? Well, actually, we're going to be evaluating Joey to see if he trains for Black Belt or not over the next couple of months. But the worst case, we want him to train for at least a year to really get something out of it, wouldn't you agree? I mean, so, you know, that's kind of the process, right? So we're never making a big deal about 12 months. We're making a big deal about being Black Belt and beyond, right? But, like, you're now focusing him on what? Where do you go? Over there. You're focusing him on, like, Purple Belt or Blue Belt initially?
Yeah. Well,
what's kind of their equivalent of Black Belt goal that you're focusing on? Purple Belt, right? So you're really focused on long-term follow-up. Your ultimate goal is to be a Black Belt. The initial, you know, initially we're qualifying, you see if you train the Purple Belt beyond. I mean, that'd be kind of your version of that.
Principles.
Exactly. So, does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
And so, then the going from here to here is about renewing their interest, getting goal setting, really being committed to the program, wanting to make this a lifestyle.
Okay, that is for 4 years, or how long? Because in Holland, after 1 year, people can quit without any problem.
Right.
You can't keep them 4 years or 3 years.
Well, yeah, you can keep them. You just can't contractually obligate them without giving them the ability to.
Okay, so the same mistake.
In the U.S., there's 50 states that are all different. Mm-hmm. In Canada, there's, what, 5 provinces that are all different, right? So Quebec is completely different than B.C., is completely completely different than, like, the rest of North America. But, you know, it's like all over the place, right? So, you know, there's some states in the U.S. where you can't sign them for more than 90 days. There's others where it's 3 years. There's mm-hmm. others where they don't care. There's others where it's a year. But there's always a workaround, right? So it's really about getting them emotionally committed to the program. It's just like going to college, right? Is the thing, if I go to Harvard or Oxford or wherever it might be, is I'm committed to get my degree, even if I haven't committed to pay the tuition payments the entire time. Regardless if I'm there, I'm committed to get to the degree. So the 90% of this is not about a piece of paper. It's about parent and child or the adult making an emotional commitment that they're going to do this long term, right? And then it's about figuring out how to make the financial instrument underneath it reflect what's legal or not, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So you can do, it's a year annually renewable, but you're committed to Black Belt. As long as you renew it, you're guaranteed at this price, right? You can also make it where it's a 4-year agreement, but it's cancelable at 1-year increments, right? There's a lot of different iterations of that, right? We do a lot of them that are really 72 months, but, you know, we'll have schools where they do the payments for 36 months, there's 36 months free, and if you have a limitation of 3 years, well, at the end of 3 years, you can choose to take or not take your 3 years free. You know, if you don't take 3 years, they're free, that's fine, right? So, does that make sense? Okay. But see, the second thing is that some portion of everybody enrolled at any given price, so let's say it's $200 a month, some portion of them will be so committed that they're willing to pay a higher price point for a more robust package of services that are going to accelerate their progress and or enhance their training. Does that make sense? The mistake that most people make is they make it about you get to come 3 times a week rather than 2 times a week, you get to come 4 times a week rather than 2 times a week. And in the age of busy soccer moms checking their Twitter feed on their cell phone while they're driving the SUV to soccer practice, the last thing they want is to be carpooling round trip another day or two, right? So, and the adults are the same way. The higher you go up in the demographics with the adults, so you've got the average 22-year-old who thinks he wants to be Brock Lesnar or whatever the current version of that is. It's not the same thing. But you have an attorney who's trying to really do something cool, work out, and get in shape, and you say to him, oh, now you get to come 6 days a week. Are you kidding? Can't I accomplish all this in the 2-day-a-week? I'm already, right? I mean, you try to make that a benefit, but in reality, it's an obstacle, right, for almost anybody that we really want. But you can get them where, my rule of thumb is, you can get them where at the intermediate step, they go from, say, 200 to 300. And at the higher step, they go from 200 to 400 or 500 a month. Okay? And truthfully, the only reason for this is to be aggressive enough with this that you have a fallback for those people who just, you price them out of the market, right? So I'd be completely comfortable with, this is 250, this is 500, this is 279, right? Or 299 or something like that. But my general rule of thumb that's held up pretty well is that if the fallback position is about a 50% bump from what they're paying now, and the higher level is 100% more or better, right? So let's say it doubles or more than doubles, that works fine, okay? And again, that's the format that we've been using for Sterling and the other schools. And the number has been pretty consistently, I mean, you're not at 87% now, what, about 79% or 80? So let's say conservatively, 75% of everybody who enrolls ends up renewed. And 90% of those who end up renewed to the higher level, right? You're still about 90-10. So of those 75%, 90% enroll in a program that doubles their tuition, and 10% enroll in a program that's about a 40% bump. Does that ratio make sense?
Robert,
yes.
When I first saw you do that program a number of years ago at those price points, when we weren't doing those price points, but we had those programs, realize it's probably more tricky to take your people there and move them to that higher price point while they're there than it is to bring somebody in from the very beginning and never.
Right.
Because you were teaching pretty much everything the same as it was. So we did have to make it a little more, add some more bells and whistles to the program to make it more appealing. But the most important thing in getting into that extra commitment or that extra step was everybody that we had now, we gave them a one-shot opportunity to go at that current price. The new people coming in didn't have that option.
And by the way,
I was at his school. I looked and I saw, you know, he told me 400 and 300, and I'm going, well, you know, everybody's going to do the 300, I would think, at least 50-50. Because who wants to pay 400 or 300, how much difference is there, or whatever. So I go out there, and there's like, there's a class, and there's 99% in blue top.
Which is the leadership.
Guys, and they're the ones paying the 400, and there's like just a handful that are in the black tops. And so I couldn't figure it out. So when I went back...
He and I have had a long history of him saying, you're crazy. And then I bring him around my way of thinking.
Once I did it, you know, what people want to do is what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
So when everybody else saw everybody else in the blue tops, so the way I transitioned it into it was a little bit, not like Master Oliver, but...
No, same way we did.
Well,
did... You want to get all the advanced belts and the instructors all in the blue top.
My top people that pretty much will do whatever I say. And I got them in. And then everybody else kind of followed. And once you get a nucleus going and then it builds up, then everybody just jumps right over that one.
Yeah.
And a few that went to that black belt club or master club in the beginning, just a few, and everybody else jumped over them.
And I'll tell you
and
what.
And it wasn't long before those that were on that bumped up themselves.
And I can tell you what I can tell you absolutely, definitely, unequivocally, analytically, from data proof, is that we're pricing leadership way too low. Because almost nobody does the other thing. Right? The whole design was, what he said before, 50-50. Design was, this was the more elite thing, and then a small number of people fall back to the other thing. And it's always been 85, 90, 95%, worst case 75% are going into the high level. Right, so they're all choosing the more expensive option, and part of that is price presentation. But they're all pretty much choosing the most expensive.
So one of the keys with that is to actually price it so high that they probably look at it like there's no way at all. So I'll take the
junk. But if I choose to take that, that's unbelievably grand.
Well, okay, I'll give you the other. I would not completely agree with what you just said, because what I'm trying again. There was one. They were last yesterday afternoon about 5:15, I think. What I'm trying to get all of our guys convinced to do, but none of them have the cojones to do it yet, is I'm trying to get them to do the 997 a month program. And so now the presentation is $1,000 a month program. The fallback is leadership. But I haven't gotten any of them to do that yet. Ironically, the one that I've got to do it was Lloyd Irving. And Lloyd went immediately sucked up, I think, 40 people in at a grand a month. And so as I told him the idea, and he's like this massive implementer, he immediately added about 40 grand a month in revenue. Now, there's a point at which I'm convinced you're always going to have, this is why I say it this way, he's getting 80 to 90% that renew, and he's getting 90% of them in the highest level. But there's always going to be 20% of any group of students that are going to do anything you put in front of them, assuming they can fit in the budget. So if you had 300 active, you're going to get 60 that want to, 30 that can't. If you had 1,600 active, you're going to have 300 that want to plus, and you're going to have 150 probably who can't, right? So if you throw something at them like $1,000 a month program or a $1,400 a month program that's tantalizing enough, 20% are going to jump on it, but a lot of them are going to be priced out. But if you get half of them that can afford it, that adds up in a hurry.
Master Oliver,
yes, sir.
He just made a comment. I just heard something in his conversation. He said blue shirt. I don't know what it is. Blue shirt concept.
Well, what we're doing in the classroom is they enroll in the basic and they're in all white uniform, and then when they enroll to leadership, they're blue top white pants, and when they get their black belt, they go blue top black pants, and then blue top blue pants. And then if they're in the lower level, black belt club, they're in a black top, right? And the colors don't make any difference. What matters is
the difference, is
having it be visible that I'm in the elite thing, and having everybody else go, I'd like to have that, right?
And colors do matter.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, we did red tops, we did black tops, we did blue tops, something that stands out dramatically.
They don't ask about leadership. They say, when can I get my blue top?
Yeah. Yeah. Parents will come in and say, I want to give you the $15,000 for a blue top, right? But that's literally like what goes on in their mind. But the thing is, and the more obvious, the better, right? So a little patch on the uniform or a little stripe on something, that's fine. If you're not having them wear like traditional uniforms, having the cool Krav uniform shirt that they all get if they're in the higher level, and then the less cool one that's the lower level. And what's going to be cool is what all the staff are wearing, right?
I like the word Krav elite.
Yeah.
Leadership.
Yeah, yeah. But all this stuff works just as fine for Krav, the leadership program. Here's the thing that happens. Most adult program people think when we talk about this, we're talking about kids programs. But the reality is all this stuff was developed with 80-20 adults to kids, right? It was all developed in adult programs. Back when you were back around with June Ree and all those guys. And it all evolved from the ballroom dance industry, for God's sake, right? So it was all developed with adults and then translated to kids. It's not kids stuff. It's just that the traditional market went towards kids, and now there's a swing back to adult market, right? But the adults, the more you're skewing more upscale, more educated anyway, the more they value beyond the physical. And so they value leadership components, they value mental skills, and most of the reason they're attracted, I don't care if it's Krav or MMA, is they view it, the way I like to say it is like the adult men, they don't come in wanting to fight, they want to be James Bond, right? is they want to be suave, debonair, get the girl, succeed at work, and be fit and feel good about themselves. And so it's easy to incorporate metaphors like, you know, SEAL training and West Point and all that stuff, and show them the evolution of how this goes beyond it's just you're learning these physical skill sets to become, you know, this idealized version of what you want to be, right? So all of this stuff translates just as well to that audience as it is, does to anything else. And what you've got to do is we've all got to get away from the mythology of the junk that we trained in and really look at what the psychological motivation is of the student and then provide the thing that develops them at the highest level.
You were mentioning regarding the 997 programming, so if you can't get them into that, they fall back into the leadership. What were you calling, or what do you call that $1,000 program?
Well,
is it still leadership?
Yeah, I was billing it as Leadership Elite.
Okay.
And billing it as a kind of a, not private lessons, I hate private lessons, but as a semi-private. And so now it's kind of a semi-private, more privatized progress checks, you know, small group, accelerated training, and so forth, right? And I know unequivocally there's a market for it. I've proven it with a few people I got to do it. It just, most people haven't grown a pair big enough and strong enough to, you know, to implement that. That was a challenge, by the way. Anybody who thinks they have the cojones to go do that, you know, go add $500,000 a year in revenue and tell everybody else about it. It's an easy one to do, okay? Now, let's go back then to, did that answer your question?
Yeah, one more thing.
Go ahead.
What happens after 4 years? What happens after leadership or a 6 years? I don't know.
Well, you always want to be leapfrogging. And I didn't address that. Our preference is when we enroll them to leadership, we're enrolling them to second degree. Okay. Now, again, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that might actually be enrolling them to black belt and the intermediate purple belt, right? For others, that might be the equivalent of third degree. For us, it's 4 years plus 3 years, basically, right? And a lot of times they get a little faster. But you always want to be leapfrogging and setting new goals. In reality, if you look at your dropout funnel, even if you're down to like 2 or 3% a month, the percentage of people that you have that are renewing from third degree to fourth degree or fourth degree to fifth degree is always pretty small, right? And you want to focus on keeping them and so forth. But the reality is what you want to do is very early on get them committed to black belt and beyond. One of the things, again, I have trouble getting people to do, so I kind of gave up on it with the franchises. All the leadership programs are in second degree black belt. And what I found years ago is just as easy a role in the second degree as it is the first degree. And occasionally a parent will say, well, that's a long time. I said, well, there really isn't any such thing as a 9-year-old getting their black belt when they're 11 and dropping out and not getting to train all the cool stuff black belts can do. Which they used to be a lie, now is true. Right? Because once we've changed the culture, none of our black belts drop out of first degree. Right? When's the last time you had somebody drop out of first degree? Right? Then he and I both were working on this 30 years ago, right? The first discovery he made that he had a hard time talking junior into is, well, if they get their black belt and they all train free, they don't train. Because it was, you get your black belt and now you train free and they all dropped out, right? So now he created a second degree program to start charging, which junior thought he was crazy. He has a long history of junior saying he's crazy, too, by the way. But junior thought he was crazy, he implemented that, and none of the black belts dropped out anymore, right? Because they were still trained. The other thing you have to do is the black belts still have to progress check every 2 or 3 or 4 months. Now you can't say it's going to be 2 years you're contesting it. They're not progress checking at least 4 times a year. You know, they go away.
To first degree, yeah. Testing cycles, yeah. Has to keep going.
Yeah.
Just like in college, just and the same as it was in high school, so people get used to that. And before, there was only a test in first, and then you tested for second 2 years later.
Yeah, And the other element is the black belts really should be paying more than anybody else, not less. And a lot of people do, well, you're coming in to help teach, so therefore I'm going to give you half price, or it's only going to be, well, that defeats the purpose because it devalues the training they're getting. And by the way, if you look at private schools, private kindergarten is cheaper than private elementary school, is cheaper than private high school, is cheaper than private college, is cheaper than a master's degree, is cheaper than a PhD, right? So In college, the per credit hour goes up from a bachelor's level undergraduate to a master's to a PhD. In in lower education, private preschool is a lot cheaper than private high school, right? So that's a natural evolution that people can understand. And I know there are little cultural differences, but that they generally can understand that. So what the black belt should be paying compared to the lower ranks actually should be more, not less. And their contributions of coming in and helping teach class isn't work hours, it's them learning leadership skills and then learning public speaking skills and then learning how to control a group and then learning small group leadership. I mean, it's a benefit for them, the same as a teacher trainee doing an internship is. It's a part of their education and training. Does that make sense? Okay. Did that answer that question? Okay. So let's try to accomplish very quickly a couple minutes on stats. So we can get back to our prime topic. Everybody has those stat sheets? Everybody but me, that is? Greg, can I have it? Did you want to go at least for about 30 minutes? Or do you want me?
I can't. It's certainly a problem that UMass was meant for it. And we don't want to do no more than 30 minutes.
Okay. Remember what the therapy or?
Yes. Let's do no more than 30 minutes.
Okay. All right, well, this should be pretty simple for everybody. We want to make this, one of the things about this is to make sure that you do this every day. You don't, once a month or so when you're getting ready to call us, try to wrap it all up and try to figure it out. Because it makes it much harder, as we mentioned before. At the end of the day, our staff puts all the stats together, and then we know exactly where we're at, not just that day, but all the way projected through the month and everything else. So total inquiries, this is how many, everybody is on the same page, right? Everybody got it? Okay. We'll just go through this quick. This is how many inquiries you've had. This is the effects of your marketing. So how many people walked in, how many people called, how many people did somehow interact with us and might be a person that we could get an appointment with. Okay, so how many people could you possibly get appointments with? Yes?
So the difference between a warm qualified lead and cold lead, should this be only warm qualified leads? And if you could define those?
This is anybody that I can set an appointment with. So if this is a set of, the phone book, if you got the phone book out, yeah. Those would be all cold. You don't put the phone book on here.
Sure.
Right? So it's somebody that has responded in some way, so they're warm. Cold lead would be somebody that has not responded. They're just part of our target list. And there's ranges of warm to cold, as Master Oliver mentioned before. Somebody who just filled out the example of filled out the thing to win the motorcycle if it was free, that's a much colder lead than somebody who filled out a form to, have information about the motorcycle. So for us, it'd be the same thing. To define what this is here, it's anybody that we can talk to set an appointment with. That would be an inquiry, right? Okay, so it goes in order. This goes right down this way in order. So this would be inquiry. And then out of this, we should be able to set appointments. Does that make sense? That's how many appointments set. So this number up here, inquiry to appointment set percentage, is the next line. And we should be getting about 80% of the people that call. Usually it's better. I mean, we really get, if there's somebody that has an inbound call, it's usually 80%. Another inquiry would be, to make a list of those, would be somebody filling out the form on your webpage. So we were calling that an opt-in before. So you got name and phone number and email address, preferably. Yes, ma'am?
Would you count, lead by leads?
Yeah. Anybody that we can call or we talk to. Anybody that we, lead by leads that we call and talk to. So ones that we actually got on the phone with.
So
yeah, if somebody puts Daffy Duck on your lead box lead and has a phone number of 45, then you don't count that as a lead. It's somebody, or if it looks like a legitimate one, but you keep calling those till you get a hold of them. Once you get a hold of them, that's considered an inquiry. Even if it's an outbound call, we consider that an inquiry. Does that clarify it?
Yes.
Is everybody okay with that?
Yes, sir.
Are there some cases I'm missing?
Can I interject one thing? The numbers that when you combine those two together,
What I found to help everybody to clarify a little easier, on this first line, an info, we actually divide it into two. And one is going to be your leads, and one is going to be your walk-ins and phone calls. So anybody who calls or anybody who walks in, those percentages are going to be completely different than your leads. And your leads can be lead boxes, they can be movie theaters, they can be wherever you collected them. But we found when we put them together, those walk-in and
the phone calls
are going to be a much higher percentage. Right. We know that the leads that you get from your lead box or from a movie theater or from a fair or something like that where you're kind of high-pressuring them or you're kind of confronting them are going to be different. So I like to split them up. You know, they can both come together as one total number, but your percentages are going to be drastically different. You'll be, you know, like 80 to 100% on your walk-ins and phone calls, and where your leads, the cold leads and all those, you're going to be lucky to get 20 to 50%.
Right. So on this paper here that we've given you, what Master Smith is mentioning is that you can add a little more complexity on there
exactly.
And track that, and that would be very good. So yeah, knowing how many actual leads you generated that day would also be another good number to track. But as far as this goes, when we see what you're doing, we want to see how many inquiries, people that you actually talked to that you could set an appointment with, or people that sent an inquiry would also be an opt-in on the website page. Okay. So we should set 80%, our target's 80%, and this is a big number that we'll watch. Now, if you don't get enough of these, your marketing wasn't working well enough, so we need to work on your marketing. But if you're doing well, a lot of times we'll say, well, we need to do more marketing, that'll solve the problem, but if you don't have 80%, if you don't set 80% of your appointments, then you have a problem. So this is something your staff needs to track, and they need to be aware of what numbers you expect. All right, now intro one and intro two. And there's some of you guys are doing one intro and enrolling them, some enrolling them directly into a program. Some of you guys are doing two, but that's either way is fine. And then you've got enrollment. And enrollment in the parlance that we just talked about would be a basic program. So intro one is how many people actually physically came in for an appointment. Okay, so this is This conversion rate would be how many people that you set appointments with show. That would be your show rate. But what we're tracking here in inquiries to intro number one is from inquiry to there. And I think, Pastor Oliver, this is probably not the number you want on there, right? Because if you do 80% here, you wouldn't do 80% here. You're really looking at this number.
Yeah,
well, the intro to enrollment's the next box, but the inquiries to intro number one, I think we really want to show appointments set to intro number one.
Exactly.
Yeah. On the sheet, it's written as intro number one to inquiries, and I think you need to make a note there. That's really this is your show rate. How many appointments you set, and this is the percentage here that we're going to track. Does that make sense? It says intro number one divided by inquiries, but it's really intro number one, intros divided by appointments.
It should be inquiry to appointment, then it should be appointment to intro, then it should be intro to enrollment.
Right. So what we want to do, that first line here, inquiries to intro number one, it should be appointments to intro one. So make a little note on there and just do it right until we update the page. So I'm glad we caught that. But that's really your show rate. So if you have a bad show rate, then we want to talk about whether or not your phone calls were done right or your appointments were set right. This helps us identify a lot of things. Then intro enrollments versus intro number ones, whether you one or two enrollments, this percentage would be your intro to enrollment percentage or your conversion rate. How many people came in that converted to a basic program? Does that make sense so far? Okay, so what do you do next in your system? Then you're going to have renewal conferences or upgrade conferences.
And sir, renewal and upgrade, you're considering interchange.
The same thing.
Okay, so what do you call someone that's on a basic program for a year and never upgrades and does a basic program the next year?
Well, Well, we don't allow them to do that. Remember, that's a trial program. That's a trial program. If you allow them to do that, and they know from the beginning they could just keep doing the lower level program, you're sort of incentivizing them to do that. So if you did that, we'd have to figure out a way. You'd have to track that separately. And if you're doing it differently than this order, then you may want to track some other statistics, and that's fine.
Yeah,
just like Master Smith said, he is.
Master Smith was a comprehensive. This isn't all comprehensive, especially in the marketing funnel. The more you keep expanding your knowledge of like Google Analytics and what happened online and so forth, the more you can have all the different pieces that come into that top line of inquiries, the more you know about what's going on.
Well,
and obviously,
there's
numbers on here that are more and less important than others, as well as far as paying attention to. But the answer to the question, short answer, Jan, is I prefer not to have the year at a time.
Yeah, so renewals imply that they go to an upgraded level program, a higher level program. Yeah, well, Master Offer is also
similar. There are exceptions, which are I'm on contract with Rockwell, we may move to somewhere. But that could just be flipped to a cancellation option.
We put them on a master for leadership with an option if they transfer.
Did everybody hear that? If somebody was going to move, that would be somewhere where they might continue on a basic program, but the other option is to upgrade them to a higher level program with an option if they've got an objection. That's just dealing with objections, though. If they've got some objection, I'm going to be moving in a year because I'm going to get transferred, they can still do everything and you just write that. Whatever their objections, we write that in the membership. Yes, sir.
So just as a rule of thumb, 12 months could be really like the maximum that you'll allow. It's that whole quarter of the way to black belt idea. 12 months is really the maximum that they can remain in a basic trial program.
To be working towards
black. Yeah, there's two ways to conceptualize this, too. One is that that's just the way you do your contract. The other way is that your curriculum is actually set up that way. There's some reasons why I have 6 months of curriculum in that year program, but if I had to do it, if I had other considerations, I'm trying to train my instructors on a few pieces of material. That's why I have 6 months. Mm-hmm. But I would just do 2 months and just repeat it for 12 months. Because in a sense...
We have 4 months. We have two months.
Right. So he's doing four...
They don't move up, they just keep rotating.
Right. And I would do two if I had to do it over again. The argument is, well, if they're not going to make a commitment to black belt, I don't want to really leave them, ethically, why would I try to teach them more stuff? You know, that's for the people who are going to make a commitment. You know, for all of you guys, you would want to learn more stuff. But somebody who's just going to stay with me a short amount of time, a year or less, we just want to get them good at a smaller amount of things.
And Jen said it, if they have that want to be, what you have to do is, what is the objection? Why do they only want to be for that year and not the 4 year? And then you have to address that and overcome that objection, rather than trying to rewrite your program for one person because they have some crazy objection. That, I don't know, in 50 years I haven't come up with one that we weren't able to overcome. So they either did or they didn't.
Right, now we're getting into sales, but let's stick with the stats right now and then we can come back to kind of what things we might want to look at when we see your stats. So intros to enrollment percentage, let's see where we're at. Okay. So now, you've gotten into enroll. So that's kind of the process that you've walked through. And your system may be a little bit different, but this is how we want to see the numbers. As we said, there's other numbers. You can keep track of which types of inquiries gave us the best intro lessons. You can keep track of which types of inquiries gave us the best enrollment or renewed the best. But let's say, everybody okay up to here where we're up to enrollments?
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so now they enroll.
And let's not go through the whole thing.
Okay.
Since we're on marketing, that's our marketing funnel stats.
Okay. Does anybody have any specific questions about the rest of the sheet here? Because this is what you guys wanted to cover.
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, when you go from an info call through an appointment and going vice versa to a sale, this is over a period of time. So on Monday, you're talking about just the ones that called in Monday, but you're talking about anybody that joined that day, correct? So that's kind of askew, isn't it?
Yeah, for that day, but then at the total of the week, it's going to average out, and the total of the month, it's going to average out. Yeah, so what you're saying is if you had 15 inquiries and you set 10 appointments, that would be the same day.
Yeah.
You know, but then if you had 10 appointments set, but you had 5 or zero interest because they didn't show up that day. They showed up the next day. That'll show up on Monday. You did the inquiries, and Wednesday they showed up. Or
so they would really make more sense maybe on a monthly basis.
Well, the numbers will be
keep them daily.
You keep them daily, but you
have monthly unless you turn daily.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. It's exactly. Let me translate. The longer period of time the numbers cover, the more accurate the ratio is going to be. Right. So let's say that I have August, and I have very few inquiries for week one, week two, week three, and then all of a sudden I flood it with, like they just had the 65 appointments or whatever, right? But then the month changes, and I enroll them all next month. Well, it may look suddenly like my enrollment ratios are crappy, but then if I look at it on a quarterly basis, go, well, that's okay, that equalizes itself out. So on a daily basis, they don't mean much. On a weekly basis, they mean a little. On a monthly basis, they're more relevant. On a quarterly basis, they're pretty good. On an annual basis, they really get to the heart of it.
But you really have to do it on a daily basis to be able to get the
And you still look at it on a daily basis. Like, you know, because a lot of these are per day. If they get 10 inquiries and they got zero appointments, I want to know what happened. You know, but some don't, you know, translate the next day, like you said. So we look at the week. That's
and again, it's not about software. It's about just paying attention, writing it down, keeping track of it. You can put it in a spreadsheet. You can put it in a software program. You can write it on a piece of paper. But as long as the numbers all add up at the end of the month, end of the quarter, you know, it's good. Yeah.
So just to clarify, where it says appointment set, that means appointment set for any time during that week, or does that just mean appointment set for that specific day?
It's you set an appointment. So if they call, I set an appointment. So it could be for now or later or whenever.
Correct.
And it could be for, you know, to go to this point, it could be for 6 months from now. Will that show up in your monthly stats? It kind of skews your monthly stats. Don't worry about that stuff. Just track it every day and then add it up for the month, and then we can make sure we keep good track of it.
What we're trying to do is to get our staff on a daily basis to go out and capture their leads, to make sure they're getting walk-ins, to make sure the phone is ringing, to make sure that we have made those appointments of those inquiries. If I said, well, I didn't get any phone calls, I didn't get any walk-ins today, I didn't have any leads, well, what the hell?
Well, we should get a couple of those.
Because that's what's going to start the ball rolling.
Right.
To make a good month, if we don't start it off from day one, and then again, if I didn't convert those to appointments, how come? Was I not calling enough of my leads? Was I just sitting around waiting for the phone? Well, I didn't make any appointments because nobody called and nobody walked.
Let me give you conceptually. There are benchmarks across the industry, and when I say across the industry, I mean among the top 10% who know what the hell they're doing, because most everybody in the industry are idiots. Okay, I mean, every business is like that. But we don't want to look. I get asked the question all the time. What's the average, you know, tuition point in the martial arts industry? It's probably $75 a month. That's an irrelevant question, right? We don't care. All that matters is what the top 10% are doing, right? But there are benchmarks across what the top 10% are doing that you should pay attention to and know, so you can see if you're doing better than that or worse than that. And then there's internal numbers, so you can see if you're doing better than you were last month, last quarter, last year, right? And this is ultimately the most important thing, is to know if you're improving or getting worse. And then the second most important thing is to know what you should mentally be shooting for, right? So a simple benchmark is, the prospect initiates a call to you. You should be able to get 60 to 80% of them enrolled. Okay? And I'm talking about from they initiate the call to they sign a contract and enroll. A lead gets generated, and you're now having to call them, and you're having to follow through. It's harder to put a fixed benchmark on it because it even depends upon where the lead had come from, right? And they call you, it varies a little bit too, but in most cases, you should be able, if you get 100 leads, you get maybe 50 intros, you get maybe 10, 15 enrollments, right? That's probably a pretty good...
about 10 to 15% on the average. So we want to get more? Well, we don't get just 100 leads this month, let's get 200 leads.
Okay.
Let's go out and capture those leads, because we know they're going to be about 10 to 15% of them will actually enroll.
And here's another benchmark.
is another benchmark is you should be at least at an average of $200 revenue per student, right? Now, that's all the money they pay you, but that number is how many do you have actively training last 30 days? Okay, that's going to be, they came this week, they've been gone 1 week, they've been gone 2 weeks, they've been gone 3 weeks. So how many you have actively training divided into the gross, right? That's every bit of revenue, billing, down payments, paid in fulls, testings, retail, everything. So take the total gross, divide it by active, and if that number is not at least 200, you're wildly under maximizing your return. Okay, so that's another benchmark.
Does everybody understand the number of students, the active students? So they get counted once, whether they came in one time or 10 times or whatever, but they counted once in the last 30
days. And a common nowadays CROV MMA problem is active is who's EFT cleared, not who showed up for class. Okay, I'm talking about who shows up for class. It's who's EFT cleared, not who showed up for class. I want to know, showed up for class, showed up twice this week, hasn't shown up for a week, hasn't shown up for 2 weeks, hasn't shown up for 3 weeks, right? And we talked about attrition rate in your case is I don't want the 3 week inactive ever to go over 1%. I don't want the 2 week inactive ever to go over 2%. And this 1 week inactive will fluctuate wildly. It's 4th of July week, a bunch of people are gone, it's a normal week, maybe 5%, right? But that translates to, if it's at 1%, that translates to 4.2% dropout a month, which is high end of acceptable, okay? The benchmark for attrition is best I've seen is sub 2%. Excellent schools I've seen in the 3 to 4% range. Once you start getting 5% and higher, you've got a problem. Okay? Yes, sir.
Can you say the weekly stats here?
I never want they've been gone 3 weeks to go over 1%, which translates out to 4.2% a month dropout rate.
And
2 weeks, 2%, and 1 week is all over the board. Because normally it would be about 10%, I would say. But if it's 4th of July week, it's Christmas week, it's back to school week or something, you know, there will be times when you have a lot of people who miss a week, and there will be other times that, you know, it's pretty normal.
If ours miss 2 weeks, we count it as a dropout.
Yeah.
So we have to take initiative steps.
We have steps every single week for each person. So, but if you don't track it, then it's hard to do.
Yeah, and this isn't on that sheet. It should be. But I always pay attention to what's the 1 week inactive, what's the 2 week inactive, what's the 3 week inactive. And I really pay attention to these two percentages. Because if these two percentages are climbing, I got a real problem, right? And it may be if you have 500 active in the school, this is 5. But that's a crisis because times 4.2, it's 22 people are going to be gone this month, right? So that's the other benchmark. The other thing I pay attention to is I always pay attention to, on the total gross, really two numbers, cash in-house billing. I've never seen anybody maximize their results, so it's too far off of that being a 50-50 ratio. Okay, if it starts to get to be 70, 80, 90% billing, you're not doing big enough down payments and you're not doing enough accelerated payments, paid in fulls, right? If it starts to be 60, 70% cash in-house, that means that your gross is going like this all the time, right? You want to build the billing where the billing covers 100% of your monthly operating expenses, including you got paid. Covers everything. The billing check comes in, the rent, the utilities, the payroll, and you, everything gets paid. And then the cash in-house is all either net profit or it's cash that you can put into additional marketing or into facilities, stuff like that. Do those benchmarks make sense? So if you build it up where, I don't care what it is, if you've got a $100,000 a month school, if the billing is $50,000, $60,000, that covers all the expenses, you know, day one when the billing comes in, everything got paid. Then you should still double that billing check. You should still have enough down payment.
60, 40, or 50-50.
Yeah. If I was 60-40 this way, I'm fine. If I start going the other direction, right? If I start getting where it's
80% of the revenue is cash and 20% is billing, that means I've got an operation that, you know, I'm struggling every month, and if something bad happens this month, and a lot of times it's something out of your control. You had shut down for blizzards in D.C., and, you know, we've had people with hurricanes and so forth. You still want to make sure all the bills are paid, right, no matter what happens.
On the marketing, is that under operating expenses, or is that going to be under the cash?
You're talking about your marketing expenses?
Yes.
Everything on this is revenue, right? The expenses would be in the P&L separately.
Yeah.
And that's a good question, Hai, as far as...
Not that sheet, but you had said that you want the operating expenses, your billing should cover...
Including your average marketing expenses. Yes, if you make more, then if you go up higher for cash, then you could use it for more marketing expenses and, you know,
like
additional stuff.
I'd like all of my normal bills to be paid, including payroll, including me, my salary.
So cash is the answer.
Right. Cash. Yeah, okay. And you raised one question. So another benchmark would be, generally, absentee owner-operator location, I'd like payroll to not be more than about 25% in an absentee operator location, 33% including the owner and owner-operator location. Okay. Now, that doesn't include net profit. I mean, so we want to have a heavy net profit, but I don't want the payroll to go much over that. I've seen some of you have like 50, 60% payroll. That's a problem, right? Number two, I don't want to see rent more than 12 to 15% of the gross. Now, if your facility is adequate and it's doing a great job for you and it's less, great. But if you're paying 25% of your gross and rent, you've got a problem. All you're doing is making the landlord rich, right? And the third thing is, pretty much nobody spends enough money in marketing. I tend to say 12 to 15% of your gross should be spent on advertising, but the reality is all your advertising should be trackable enough that it's based upon an ROI, a 10-to-1 ROI, a 5-to-1 ROI, a 20-to-1 ROI. But in general terms, if you look at your year and you're spending 4% on advertising, you'll be making a lot more net profit if you spend a lot more on advertising, right? So again, you know, it's not a good way to think about marketing, but it's a good benchmark. If you look, it'll flag it for you.
When you said 25% is just your staff, correct? If it's,
well, if you're working in the school, if you're running a school and working it, owner-operator is 33%.
Yeah. Well, hi, right now, as I understand your operation, you and Eric are still essentially integral components of your main school.
Yeah.
So you've got to consider you and Eric getting paid and everybody else to be in this 33 to 35% range, right? Then there should be a big net profit, right? And probably what you should do, by the way, is pretty quickly you need to abstain yourself from that so you're just supervising the whole operation, right? Because you're now at four locations. But, and then you would want each location not to be much more than about 25%. But then that leaves money, I mean, it's leaving about 8% for corporate overhead, then it's leaving hopefully 50% or better for net profit. Okay. Any other questions on that before we move on? We don't want to get much further bogged down in that.
Tuition revenue and billing company collections. What's the difference
between on this sheet, tuition revenue would be in-house revenue, down payments paid in full. Billing company would be the monthly bill. Okay.
Yeah, the collections doesn't mean some people got confused. Like, is that what I'm paying for billing? This is not expenses. It's all revenue.
Yeah.
So this is how much your billing check is every month.
Yeah.
But the tuition revenue is cash.
Right. Well, it's cash for tuition for memberships, and then retails, merchandise. Special event would be clinics.
Yeah, it's not contracts. You deposit in the bank. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, Amex, cash, check, firstborn.
Billing collection would actually be a monthly thing. It's not really a weekly.
No, but you're gonna when it comes in, you can mark it.
Yeah. On this, there's not a daily collection. It's the monthly number, so it's fine.
Some people do have some kind of software that collects all the time and put that in there.
And if you do,
just whenever it comes in, you put it in.
Different times of the month, whatever day it comes in, you write it down on that number.
The only two things I would add to this is that when it comes to revenue, I've seen some of you who, like, it's like you've got $683 over here, you've got $1,200 over here, and you've got this program that's bringing in $800, and you got this other thing. Over the years, I ended up, I've only really focused on two things.
how much cash for tuition do I get in-house, down payments, paid tolls, and so forth, and how far higher can I build that billing check? And I don't care about anything else. And I mean anything else, right? All that other stuff, if there's a little ancillary revenue streams and so forth, is fine. But what I find out is most of those little ancillary revenue streams distract from the bread and butter, right? You pay attention to the bread and butter. Big down payment, big monthly payment, and it gets paid, right? And what is a a long conversation
about that for merchant.
It's the nickel and diming effect. The story I've told, you've heard me probably tell this one if you've read some of the stuff, is I talk about there's a hotel in Florida, Colorado, called Harbor Beach Marriott. And it's a very nice place. Anybody been there? It's right on the beach in Fort Lauderdale. It's got its own private beach, a Hawaiian motif. We used to do meetings down there. And so I got in the habit of, I'd go down there periodically and just stay there. And put context in the story, last time I was there, I was paying $5.59 for the room, right? So it wasn't a cheap place, but it was nice. And I vowed never to go there when I was studying at the pool with my book, and they charged me $3 or $2.50 every time they refilled my little plastic cup of iced tea. So they dinged, every time they dinged me $2.50. Doesn't make any logical sense because I'm paying $5.50 a night for room is rounding error. But every time they dinged me $2.50 to refill my iced tea, it got me more and more agitated, right? And it was really a series of things. It was the safe in the room was like $7, and the valet parking was $35, and the pick up the phone, was $0.75. But all I remember is the third refill of iced tea, I vowed never to stay there again. And I mean, my bill was $2,500. They could have charged me $5.75 for the room, thrown everything in, and I would have gone there 20 more times, right? But most martial arts schools get in this habit of nickel and diming people to death, and especially even doing it before you ask them for the big upgrade. See, I want to enroll them, then I want them to write me a check for $25,000, and I don't want to annoy them at all in between, right? So I don't want. I mean, we used to do. Okay, at this point you need your hand pads and mouthpiece. At this point you need your foot pads. At this point you need this note. If you're going to do that, either one big package or it's included in the renewal. But you've got to evaluate test fees, retail, have them buy the patch, have them pay for the seminar, have them. Every time you ask them for money, it's never a positive interaction in the relationship when you have them pull out the credit card, right? So every time you're dinging the relationship, right? It's Joe Corley's and Covey's thing of building the emotional bank account. I'd rather it be it's all about service and I have two sales and that's the only time you think about money, but I'd rather the sales be big ones. I'd really be paying me $1,000 a month EFT and I never have to think about it again. And if I can't get you to do 1,000, let's say 400 a month EFT, and I never have to think about it again, I don't have to ask you for money again. They don't have to worry about it again. The worst case scenario I've ever seen in a martial arts school, this is again in Fort Lauderdale, we were at this school in a watching class, and there's like 32 cute little karate kids, and all of a sudden all the kids come out to the lobby holding a hand out like this to mom. And so the moms are reaching through their purses, pulling out dollar bills, right? And then the kids go back, and I pulled the owner over and said, "What's going on?" He goes, "Oh, it's board breaking day." And then he proceeded to take us back to a little room in back where he had a saw, a table saw, and stacks of lumber. And he told us about how much money he was making selling boards. But picture what happened. 32 kids in class running over to mom. 6 kids over here crying because mom and dad's not here. They don't have dollars to break boards. 5 kids over here who got to break like 10 boards. So everybody else is annoyed that mom gave them a $10 bill. 3 moms over here digging through their purse annoyed, asking if they can pay next time because they didn't bring any cash, digging out their credit card to give them $3 for a thing, right? So what did they do? They annoyed most of the parents, and they frustrated to the point of tears 4 or 5 kids, and they made an extra $50.
And I would also add, that one bothers me a lot, but I would also add, think about the staff trouble to manage the boards, cut the boards, do the thing, do the... That's why we stopped selling waters in the school and stuff, because at the end of every class, the kids would be running up there with their things, and instead of the guys doing one big, huge sale that they should do, they end up messing around with this little nickel and dime stuff, so you've got a lot of that.
My personal example was working in one of our schools, and I've got the mom buying foot pads, and she wants to try on the size 9, then she wants to try on the size 11, back and forth, as my $20,000 renewal is walking out the door. Right? You always forget about opportunity costs. right? I mean, simple things. Years ago, it came to mouthpieces. I mean, we buy them $1,000 a piece. They were like, you know, 20 cents a piece, 50 cents a piece. Box of mouthpieces, barring guys, kid doesn't have a mouthpiece, give him a mouthpiece. Parent tries to pay for it, say, fine, you buy a mouthpiece, all right, just don't worry about it. Right? I mean, anything like that. He was talking about bottled water. You don't sell bottled water. You just, you know, every now and then bring them in and give them to the parents or give them to the intros and don't worry about it, right? But if your tuition is high enough, you don't worry about all that stuff, right? It's the guys who are broke are out pulling the money out of the Coke machine, right? Now, before I was ever involved in any of that stuff, tried to do a deal with Coke. And the biggest problem they had with Coke is all the karate guys would go open it up themselves and go to Costco and refill it rather than having the Coke driver refill it because they were trying to save a dime per can. And they couldn't get the deal going with Coke because they were going around the contract on the deal to begin with for to save a dime, right? That's what broke people do, right? What you do if you're making money with this is you provide overwhelming service and you minimize the nickel and diming of the thing, right? Again, think about a hotel. If I go spend $500 for a room or I spend $100 for a room, every little thing they ding me for starts to annoy me, right? But if they can charge 20% more and build it all in, and then they've got a happy customer, right?
But that's different from say, belt examination fees.
Well, that's a different conversation.
Okay.
I think it's the same thing. But there's a valid argument both ways. Some people belong to associations where you have to do that.
The strategy of pricing is what we're talking about. And don't be pricing for things. Like, we have some fees. APA guys, we have to pay like a $40 fee that they pay a member every year. I just roll it into the tuition because I don't want them to get a bunch of notices saying they owe money for something. I just want them to pay me. So, there's a lot of ways you can roll pricing in. But, you know, like the bottled water thing's a great idea. I asked Master Smith, well, what happens if, you know, don't they get used to that? He goes, no, I just do it every so often. It's
right.
Like a prize. It's like a reward. Now people feel good. Every time they forget their stupid mouthpiece, now they get, it's like, wow, you guys were great. And that those kind of things, you got to think about the strategy of pricing. We're kind of getting off topic from the stats. But it's, you know, make it feel good to the students.
But just the last point on that, if it were me, and four times a year they're testing, and let's say it's $30 a year, right? That's $120. I'd add $10 a month to the tuition. Doesn't matter. Not charge them for anything. And if I had to pay the association $30, I've already got my extra $10 a month. I'd send the $30 and not worry about it, right? That's in my mind, almost always a better way to do it, is build it into the tuition, especially build it into the upgrade tuition. And they're not going to be sensitive to an extra $10 a month, but when you ask them for an extra 30, is, you know, mom comes in and the transmission just blew and they're stressed for money. And now you add to her stress. There's more emotional trauma that's caused than the incremental revenue. I mean, you've always got to be aware of that dynamic.
And there's some options of how to do that that will make it all.
Let's shift topics.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see if we can get back on topic. We were great on the agenda yesterday. Even Amanda gave me compliments for staying off today on topic for the agenda. So let's go back to massively on topic. On purely marketing, and I passed you out two or three different publications here. And here's what I want to talk about, is I want to talk about marketing mindset and grassroots marketing as two sides of the same coin. So you can call it community outreach. Or grassroots, whatever you want to think about it. But let's first talk about it in terms of opportunity awareness. Here's the first thing you have to do in order to be good at anything. I don't care what it is. But to be good at marketing on a week-by-week, month-by-month basis, you always have to have a beginner's mind. Empty the cup, assume you know nothing, always question every assumption. You've got to always have a beginner's mind. And the people in our context that we have the most difficulty working with are the ones that are stuck on a plateau, are doing fairly well, but are convinced they know everything there is to know about the business. Right? And what I've always been very good at, if I may say so, is, you know, I call it being a little agnostic on any new idea, right? What I am good at is looking at any new idea, even if reflexively I don't like it, with an open mind to look at whether the numbers support it or the numbers don't support it, right?
A recent example was the idea of martial arts schools in Walmart. Told the idea, I reflexively am repulsed by the idea. But I spent a lot of time, effort, looked at it, sat down in Frank and his partner's office in Orlando. Some of the initial people that they hired, they had one in Colorado, so they initially hired one of the guys that was working for me to run it on a national basis, one of our black belts to run the place, and then he was replaced by another one of our black belts. One of their first locations is in a suburb of Tulsa. I'm from Tulsa. I went to Tulsa and looked at that one, looked at another one. Have been to three or four, have talked to some of the managers with and without them knowing who I was. Really, really spent a lot of time looking at it, although my initial assumption was a stupid idea. And after I spent all that time looking at it, I concluded it was a stupid idea. But you've got to make sure you don't write something off because of your existing knowledge base, because none of us know as much as we think we know, right? And the more we're convinced that we know how things work, the more locked in we get to that plateau. And I'm convinced that the Ray Kroc quote, and I don't think he came up with it, but it's one of his favorite, of you're either green and growing or ripe and rotting, holds true in everything. There's no such thing in this business, and I don't think in any business, of a plateau. There's no such thing as I get it to $40,000 a month or I get it to $50,000 a month and I'm making this amount of money and I'm comfortable and I'm going to just keep doing all the stuff I've been doing and I'm going to keep on the same level of knowledge that I'm going to be doing and everything's just fine, because it never works that way. As soon as you get to a plateau, you start to die. And as soon as you get to a point of certainty about all the different components of the operation, the external market changes, new technology comes, something happens, and you go from here to here rather than from here to here, right? And some of my old associates, I've interacted with them a lot in the last couple years, and I've been very frustrated by the ripe and rotting. In other words, closed-minded, thinking they know how everything works in the industry, and in reality they're on a gradual downward slope when they think that they know everything they need to know, right? You've got to be constantly aware of that. In a marketing context, is we are all always aware of what we expect to see. And if you can go through your day in the community around your school with a fresh mind, you start to notice all kinds of stuff and all kinds of opportunities that you wouldn't expect otherwise, right? A story we told at one of the last boot camps is when I went to DC Krav Maga, we went out the front door and walked around the block, and I saw about 822 opportunities, slight exaggeration, that Al wasn't able to see because he knew what to expect when he walked around the block and I had a different pair of glasses on, right? And it really is, to some extent, it's that simple. You have a preconception of what your neighborhood is like. You have a preconception of what your location is like. You have a preconception of what there is you can do in your community to promote your school. You have a preconception. A lot of people, when I talk about school programs, say, oh yeah, but our district won't. Bullshit. Our school won't. Wrong. We can't do it because wrong. Now, doesn't mean that each and every instance there's not going to be barriers. Doesn't mean in each and every instance there's a need to look for different approaches to break through those barriers. Doesn't mean that there are people in authority in some cases that have a bad taste in their mouth about martial arts. I mean, in Denver, what it was, there's three or four Kempo idiots who had gone into schools and told the kids to poke each other in the eyeballs. And then they didn't want the martial arts guys because that's what they thought it was. I'm an equal opportunity insulter. So it wasn't that they knew what we were doing. They had a preconception that we had to break that barrier down, right? So from a grassroots and community outreach approach, here's one question to ask yourself every day, and it's the blank legal pad question. Who do we have in our school who is in a leadership position in an organization, owns a company, is an influencer in an organization, has a group of people that they communicate with, blog with, meet with, that would be useful to growing the school? Okay? And a lot of times we stop thinking that way about our clientele, or we don't think about it every day. You know, and it used to be the thing that every week I would have to have it with the staff meeting. who did we enroll new this week? Who does something interesting? Is there, you know, anybody who's like in the news media, anybody? And, you know, I would find, you know, we had a couple of Bronco players and ex-Bronco players, and we had some news media people, and we had at one time the CEO of what's now Wells Fargo. It was then Norwest Bank's holding company. We had the president of a $380 million electronics chain. We had a radio talk show personality. We had, I can go through, you know, keep going through the list. But if you don't, like, dig a little bit, and it's easier to do this in a single school, harder in a multi-school, but you've constantly got to have that blank mind of thinking, who is it here in the school that could help us, right? So, I mean, you all have, whether it's a CEO of a company with 1,000 employees, or it's the we had CEO of what's now CenturyLink, not CEO. We had the human resources director for CenturyLink, which is at the time the biggest employer in the Denver metropolitan area. They had 45,000 employees. Stumbled across that this was like a new leadership student in the school. Well, we ended up with quarterly payroll stuffers to every one of their employees with a special thing. We ended up going to any big employee gathering. We ended up in their wellness newsletters, them pointing them at Mile High Karate. We also ended up with the guy who was in charge of the Rocky Mountain Flag Football League. And so at the end of the that's a $100 fine. goes to my favorite charity, the Porsche Development Fund. at the end of the season, he would send a personalized letter out to all of them saying in the off season it's very important to cross train. My sons have been doing extremely well in football, and that's because of Mile High Karate, and here's a free month pass, right? Now, all of a sudden, that's community outreach activities in the easiest possible barrier, because it's somebody who's internal to your school, loves you, loves the operation, and is willing to help you, right? And, like, it's working with an elementary school. I see a lot of school owners, and they go in, and they butt head with a school principal, and they assume that it's impossible to do. And I want to remind you, the person at the front desk at a school, their job is to protect the principal. And the principal's job is to say no. That's their job. That's what they're going to do most of the time, right? However, the president of the PTA, who happens to be one of your the mom of one of your black belts and is a key leadership school, figure in the school, sets an appointment to walk in and talk to the PE teacher, and sets you appointment to walk in and talk to the after-school enrichment program, and then walks you in and introduces you to the principal as the person in charge of who created the turnaround in their child. You have a whole different relationship with them. Does that make sense? And so you want to be constantly aware of what each and every student, former student, a friend of students, what they do. And none of this is manipulative, because if you're doing a tremendous service for your students, what do they want? They want to share that with each and every one of their friends who would benefit at the same level, right? And so as long as you're in this, again, it's why retention and service, yet another reason why retention and service beyond the ethical component of giving them what they paid for is crucial, right? So you want to be constantly aware of that. Then you have, and what Al and I did, is you want to constantly take off your existing glasses, if you will, clear your mind, and just step outside your school and walk around the block, walk around the shopping center, drive around the 2 or 3 block radius, drive around the 4 or 5 block radius, and try to look for noticing everything that's there from an opportunity standpoint, and not just driving it the way you've always driven. Okay? A routine I got into about 20 years ago with multi-schools is I was putting lots of miles in the car and driving around to them all and all this stuff, management by walking around. But I always took a different route every time to the school. So I would take the route that took me by the big park. I would take the route that took me by the big church. I would take the route that took me by the community center, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I would pay attention to the banners. I would stop in the grocery stores locally and look at the bulletin boards. I would stop in the community centers and pick up the flyers and the things. I would stop in the big churches and pick up their newsletters. I'd stop by the elementary schools and pick up the parent newsletters. And I would just get good at, if I was running an individual school, I'd go visit every elementary school in the area at least once a month, and I'd pick up the flyers and look at the thing and get the student newsletter, and I'd make sure I was on their list and email if that's possible. And I'd stop into all the big churches and pick up their bulletins and look at their bulletin board and meet the people there. And I would stop into the community centers and pick up the flyers and so forth. And it's amazing what you can learn if you empty your mind of limitations and are open to possibilities and start looking at your community in a new way, right? You know, one example I've been trying to get people to do stuff like this for years is, this is the flyer for the recreation programs at the Golden Rec Center that comes to my house, because I'm actually in Evergreen, but I'm in a Golden mailing address, right? So they missed target a little bit, but this shows up. These guys sell paid advertising. Almost all of these little flyers, they sell paid advertising. Everybody I tell this to say, well, I already have a Taekwondo program, I can't buy paid advertising. For years, I was buying a full-page ad, page three, and a whole bunch of these with an ad that featured Chuck Norris. That was an introductory offer for Mile High Karate. Pulled gangbusters, I paid about $200 every time. Right? There's an awful lot of opportunities that are out there that you just haven't stumbled across. Right? But if you stumble into the community center and you start looking around and you look at their programming and you look at the bulletin board and you pick up the flyer, you say, well, oh, wait a minute, there's like an ad for State Farm in here. Oh, look at this, there's another ad. Well, maybe they sell ads. And, you know, what you might have, see, would you like to be in that ad? I mean, this flyer went to everybody who has a Golden mailing address. My guess is it's 45,000 people. Who looks at this? Well, you know, with us, it'd be Jody looking for Chase swim lessons. Right, because he's six and he needs to take the next level of swim lessons because he's not terribly competent around the water. So would that be a good prospect for the six-year-old for karate lessons? Right. Yeah. Right? And, you know, in my household, I have a predisposition for against programming for things like gymnastics and stuff, because I assume they're going to be flakes, just because probably my martial arts expectations. But, you know, I'm not going to put them in dance lessons here, but, you know, swim lessons down at the community center, that'd be fine. So you get a lot of opportunities, and, you know, in a sense, I can't give you a checklist because your community is going to be a little different than Lakewood, Colorado, or Golden or something. But in another sense, there's a big general palette of opportunities, right? So when we walked around looking for a cross school in D.C., what were we seeing? First thing we saw was he had an expectation about demographics. So I pulled out my Zillow app and pointed out that condo there was for sale for $600,000. And looked on the street and noticed that there was a BMW 5 Series, 7 Series, a 911 Carrera 4S all parked on the parking lot, and then walked through Starbucks and literally went, yes, 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 no, yes, yes, no, yes, yes. And what did I mean? Student prospect, student progress, right? And I think I embarrassed him because they're like, I'm saying it out loud. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no.
Very rude awakening.
And then we were walking down the block. Yes, no, yes. Some of them were babes, and others were prospects, but, you know, either way.
All the way around the block.
Yeah, yeah, we went around the long block.
Wow.
And he was talking about there wasn't any opportunity. I was saying, well, what is this thing? Oh, that's where the NBA Washington team plays. Is there a little traffic coming in and out of this facility? Okay. What's that? Oh, that's a 26-plex AMC theater. Oh, is there a little traffic coming in?
Can I say something?
Of course. You don't have to do that. I'm just talking about fresh look.
You set us up.
I did. I freely admit that. I didn't set us up. I set you up.
I set me up. I tell him where I thought there was no one there, and he and I said, yeah, okay, I see that. Sure. Let's go for a walk.
But see, if you don't take your presumptions off and go drive your community and stop into all the big places where your clientele gathers and take a fresh look at it, you miss opportunities, right? Is There can be opportunities with a local bowling alley. There can be opportunity at the sports fields. There can be opportunities at the parks. There can be opportunities with the churches. There can be opportunities with public schools, with private schools. But if you don't get out in the community and go just meet people and so forth, and personality-wise, I remember I had Chris Apold in town one time, and we were driving by Columbine High School, and I said, oh, by the way, there's Columbine. And he said, well, I'm on the committee in our area to do something. They did a little parent-teacher committee to think about the ramifications of all that and so forth. And I said, well, that's really cool. You want to go meet the principal? And he looked shocked. I said, well, just a human being like anything else. If you've been actively involved with that, he'd probably like to meet you. You know, I pulled in the parking lot. And he was just kind of like shocked that I'd have the chutzpah to do that. It's like, well, people are people are people. And, you know, occasionally there's a gatekeeper. So now you got to learn the skill of getting past the gatekeeper, getting around the gatekeeper, or, you know, getting them on the way to the bathroom rather than trying to blow through the gatekeeper to the office. But there's nobody in your community that you don't have access to if you don't pick up the phone, do an email, and walk in, right? Now, you know, it's not you're going to have 100% success, but if you don't have that attitude about it, right, is you end up with a problem. I mean, I sat down in the office, the person in charge of the entire, you know, Denver Public School Systems, and persuaded them why we should be the only one allowed to come in and do this stuff. And they had a firm district policy for 12 years that no martial arts school was ever being allowed to cross the front threshold of a school ever again. And all the time people tell me, well, you can't do that here because, and they're wrong, right? The because may be it's going to be a little bit more creative, take a little bit more time, take a little bit more dripping, take a little bit more creativity, but almost always you can do it. Now, an exercise, yes?
Oh, that's what you were saying yesterday. You have to have persistence and persuasion. Right?
Well, persistence, persuasion, and flexibility, right? So,
look, if this is the goal here, and I try this entrance and I get blocked, right? There's question A is, was my approach to getting in this entrance appropriate? Can I modify it and try it in a different way? Or is there a side door? Is there a back entrance? Is there the janitorial closet I can sneak in? Is there, you know, whatever, right? I mean, going back 20 years, I've had staff tell me, well, it's really hard to just go meet the PE teacher because they lock the doors. You know, we had two schools that were like a couple miles from Columbine, you know. Columbine, and all of a sudden all the, you know, schools were locked and everything, especially in Colorado, right? And I've never had trouble walking into a single school ever in my life. But, you know, you've just got to know what it is you need to do. And, you know, to get in public school, you dress like all the other parents, and you kind of show up when everybody else is there, and you just kind of walk in like you own the place. You know, ahead of time, you know who it is you need to talk to, and you've looked at the little diagram and know where it is you're going. You say, I'm going to go see Mr. Smith, and you go see Mr. Smith, and it's just fine, right? And then once you've broken that barrier, you just act like staff, right? I mean, I used to have a lot of schools that, you know, I'd walk in, there's a new person, and go, oh, was he from the ad building, or what's it? Oh, no, he's just a karate guy. Okay, and I've had schools where I can go in the teacher's lounge and put anything I want them to distribute to the kids and, you know, just pop into class and do stuff. And, you know, it's just, you just got to develop that persona, but it's about rapport. But it's also about, like, not taking no for an answer too easily, right? But, you know, like, if it's a school, you walk in the front door, talk to the secretary, tell them you need to see the principal. She says, no, we're not allowed to do anything like that. Go away. Well, you're a freaking wimp if you give up at that point, right? On the other hand, you mail the principal a big package of information, you mail the PE teacher a big package of information, you mail the after-school enrichment person a big package of information, the vice principal, if there is such a thing, a big packet of information. You find an excited mom who's... Now, don't find the mom who's a pain in the ass. Because the mom who's a pain in the ass for you is a pain in the ass for them, right? Okay, because they're going to run the other direction. But you find the mom who's real excited and vivacious, and if she's a PTO president or something, even better, right? And they walk you in to go meet the PE teacher and go meet the after-school person, and she sets an appointment to introduce you to the principal. Fantastic, right? But that's what I'm talking about. There's always, like, what's the angle
that I can get this thing to happen. And even pretty successful people, I mean, Tim and Dave Cope are good friends of mine, but they've told me a bunch of times, you can't get anything done with the Sacramento schools because, and then I got them to do the flyer thing, and they do 100,000 quarterly and get flooded with people, but they just had this block that, you know, California is different. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, Netherlands isn't different, right? I mean, it's all the same. You know, the guys we had that were in Amsterdam, you know, got them to raise the prices, and they told me all day long that the median was like $47 U.S., got them to raise the prices over $100 U.S., they went from $17,000 to $75,000 in six months. So, you know, not different, right? And, like, you guys from Canada are famous for this. Well, what's the difference between Canada and the U.S.? Question is, what's the difference between Philly and Denver? And what's the difference between Vancouver and Toronto? And what's the, I mean, you know, I've been in Vancouver a lot, and it's like the mirror image of Denver, other than like they have water and we have better skiing, right? So, I mean, other than that, it's like the mirror image, and the personalities are almost the same. Now, you can get away with, you know, you can get away with some stuff in New York you'd never do here. Because it's much more conservative, and now if you go into Texas, Oklahoma, and the Bible Belt, you have to, especially with kids, you have to be even more concerned. But there are minor cultural differences, but the principles carry everywhere you go, right? But going back to marketing specifically, that's the reason I gave you these flyers. Other than the culture of shock of seeing the alternative newspaper with all the pot ads in the back, this one, yeah, see, is now legal in Colorado. So I sent to Dan Kennedy, one of the pot shops is using his No BS logo as part of their ad. I sent that to him. I don't know if he found it humorous or if they sued him. But for the kids market, this is a good one. For the adult market, this may have some possibilities. I'm not suggesting any co-promotions with the sex lines or the pot shop, but one of the things I've always done in our staff meetings, at least once a month, pick up all this stuff and have everybody go through and read things like this with a highlighter, okay? And so take just a couple minutes, let's not make it a project, but start at the front or back and read through. Let's say we're thinking about kids market, let's take this one, it's probably more productive. And go through it page by page and think about this. What events are advertised that would be useful for you to be there? What companies are advertising that have your clientele that you might be able to do a co-promotion with? What schools or other organizations are in there that you might be able to do something with? What other businesses are interesting that might have a customer list that you could benefit from? Right? So go through it page by page for a couple minutes and just circle a bunch of stuff. Obviously, other than for Amanda and Greg and Kim and Steve, this isn't specific ones that are useful, but the idea of looking for these type of opportunities is very useful. Does that make sense? Just take about 5-10 minutes and go through with an open mind. Okay, so let's stop there for a second. Just randomly, what are some things you found that might be useful?
Well,
go ahead.
First page, Kids' Choice Health and Wellness
Fair. Well, there you go. So Kids' Choice Health and Wellness Fair, what are the opportunities there? I mean, certainly an opportunity is you have a booth there, you do the standard prize giveaway, schedule an appointment, you can come in for the intro, all that stuff's on the member website. There might be an opportunity to like co-host it in some way, shape, or form. So a lot of times that can mean you get the mailing list of attendees and you can mail to the attendees. You get information literature given to attendees when they get there. They certainly do have a list of other vendors and hosts and co-hosts. You can get the list of other vendors to market to the other vendors. Some of these events are good because the other vendors are people you should be working with. So even if there's not a lot of parents dragging their kids on, you go meet with all the other vendors, and suddenly you've got the person who sells, you know, child ID kits and you're going to go partner with a child ID kit guy, and he's going to give a free month of martial arts lessons to everybody who does a child ID kit or whatever it might be. I'm just, you know, making that up. But you look at all the other vendors and figure out how you can make it a win for them to work with you, so it becomes a win-win.
How about 10 ways to get better grades and go in and do that with the, and then the, give them, have a packet they can win or something, give them something, some kind of free supply or something?
Absolutely, absolutely. You could go into an event like that and run a class, run a series of classes. You could run an anti-abduction, you could run an anti-bullying, you could do a 10 steps to better grades. You don't go into a thing like that and run a Kenpo class, right? You don't run a Jeet Kune Do, Taekwondo class. You go into a thing like that and run the 10 things parents need to know to make their child immune to bullying. 5 things parents need to know to have their child be safe in all situations, right? Again, get inside the conversation going on in their mind, solve the problem they believe they already have. And the problem they have is not that their child doesn't know Kenpo well enough or whatever, right? So, what else? What else is valuable in here so far?
The right on the inside cover, kids Kenpo, and lots of orthodontics. I'd like your input on, and I know that you outlined, you can probably figure it out, but with all of us here, quick outline of how we could tap into those orthodontics. I mean, I think it'd be kind of absolute place to go. Have the kids knock each other's teeth out.
No. Here's what I've gotten to happen a bunch of times. Is obviously when you talk to the orthodontist, I say obviously, but you go into the orthodontist talking in terms of, hi, I'm with, we have this many hundreds or thousands of families, a list that is this many thousands of families in the area. We have worked with this many thousands of families over the years. We've been here for 20 years, we're right over there. And what I'd love to do, because I've got a whole bunch of students that have mentioned you, love coming to this place, I'd love to figure out a win-win to help build your practice. And obviously, if you think it's appropriate to help, you refer some of your clients to us. So, I mean, you start the conversation always with that, right? Is you start it with what's in it for them, right? And the conversation is expansive enough of, you know, I always have the conversation of, hi, I'm with Mount Lake Credit. We've been here 30 years. We've worked with, you know, over 30,000 families. We have currently a mailing list in the area of well over 12,000 households in the area. We work very closely with Jefferson County Public Schools, Adams County Public Schools, et cetera. And, you know, a bunch of our parents have mentioned that they just love your practice or whatever. I'd love to figure out some ways that we can help you, you know, grow your business, figure out what some of your goals and objectives are, and maybe there's some win-wins we can do together, right? And then the ultimate win-win you can be creative. There's probably a lot of other things we could jointly think about. But one of the things we've done before is letter goes out to their patient list. Now, keep in mind, if I'm a dentist, I may be seeing my patients once or twice a year. So how big is their patient list? Huge. It has to be huge, right? I mean, a big dental practice may have 6 people going all at the same time, 30 minutes back-to-back all day, and they see them all once or twice a year in most cases. So they've got a huge list, right? And so what you'd love to do is have email out from him, letter out from him, accept voicemail to them in his voice, right? But what we've gotten to work quite a few times is the letter is something like, you know, hi, this is Dr. So-and-so at Smiling Kids Dental or whatever. I'm so happy and pleased to have you as a patient that I lined up a free gift for you, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about it. And what it is I've had a lot of patients who have been involved with, Mile High Karate for many years, and they've had a dramatic turnaround. I was asking a parent just recently, what the behavioral change was in their child, and they attributed it to these guys. So I thought it might be something you could benefit from as well. So as a free gift for you, I've lined up a $200 value certificate. It's good for a completely free, no-obligation uniform, completely free month of lessons, completely free semi-private class with the instructor, completely free DVD and CD package. And if you'll just call this number or go to this website, you'll get all the details, and you can claim that under my name.
Right.
right? And now what's in it for him? Well, I just gave 10,000 patients a $200 free package from me that looks like it's a real high value thing, right? And what's in it for me? I just got an endorsement from him for us to his patients who he has credibility with, right? And many, many different business formats fit something that's like that, right? But certainly an orthodontist, you know, they're dealing with, you know, with kids, or a kid's dental practice, they're dealing with kids, an adult dental practice, it could be exactly the same thing. For cardio kickboxing, back when we were doing a lot of cardio kickboxing, I had deals with nail salons, with tanning salons. We had the, which turned out it was a friend of mine, the biggest Paul Mitchell distributor, in, well, the Paul Mitchell distributor for two-state area. And I was getting them to not only sponsor it, but get us into all the hair salons they were working with, and they had a sales force going out there. We were getting the hair salons to email to their client list, the tanning salons to mail and email to their client list. And a lot of them I didn't want to pony up for direct mail because their lists were too big, but I could get them to email and, you know, get to give out passes or one thing or another right there. So the question is always, who has your clientele? You know, if you're looking for 20, 30-something women for fitness, where do they go otherwise, right? So do they go to the hair salon? Do they go to a boutique? Do they go to a nail salon? Do they go to, what social outings do they do? What clubs are they involved with? What is it you can do? And then you have, what businesses do they work for, right? You know, for cardio kickboxing, we did, you know, we went and did things at sororities, and we went and did things at restaurants with a bunch of female client, waitresses and so forth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So you go through the list of, where did my clientele hang out, right? What else? What else in this did we come up with so far? Day out with Thomas and Train. By the way, we've been there every year. Let me make a note. Chase loves this. My daughter loves this. You guys know about this? This is the Day Out with Thomas and Train.
What page is
and,
seven.
This is page 7. They go all over the country. They have this train that looks like Thomas. And you get on the train and you ride Thomas the Train. And they have batteries dead. Jeff, do you have your charger?
I have a charger here.
Here. Okay. But did you catch it?
Yeah.
First bounce.
Yeah. But they have all kinds of vendors out there, right? And this thing, by the way, is not the, you know, P.S. Thomas the Train Day. It's for that before you. But they have like thousands of kids and families that go through this damn thing, right? I mean, this is, they have big full size like Greyhound buses that schlep people in cycles like Disney would from outlying parking lots to the Railroad Museum to come ride on Thomas around the little track and inside and get a picture with Mr. Topham Hat and with Thomas and so forth, right? So that's something you could certainly do a booth with. You could be you could go talk to the host and see if there's some other things you could do on an ongoing basis, et cetera. What else?
So list of camps and classes right here at the bottom of the opposite page.
Oh, same page. So we've got a...
says there's a...
Oh, I see. Yeah, and actually they're soliciting camps and so forth to do it, but obviously their website and in the magazine, they have all of that kind of stuff. I would also say, you know, in the little ninjas market, you've got Mary Hill Schools, Castle Rock Highlands Ranch Park. That doesn't do you guys any good, but if you were near there, there's somebody you could do something with. What else? What else?
And this one, a back-to-school sale at the Optical Masters.
Yeah,
you could add something to what they're giving out.
Yeah, see, a lot of these businesses, if you just go in with more or less the spiel I just gave you about how you're looking to help them because you're really impressed with their operation, there's all kinds of things you can get to be as a win-win, right? Anything else? What else have you come across?
The gymnastics right here.
Yep. Big gymnastics school, a lot of win-win back and forth. Mailing lists, you go in and teach things, have them come in and teach some little things that had your deal. You know, all the little girls doing gymnastics, you get the boys to come in, you get your boys, your advanced boys to go do some gymnastic class from them and cross-feed and work together. Dance schools will be the same thing. Yes, sir?
On page 8, you could submit an article for publicity.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You could be, you could become a columnist in the magazine, and start doing a regular column. You could also start in magazines like this are desperate for editorial copy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they really don't want to pay a bunch of writers, but they're desperate for editorial copy. So if they see you as enough of a credible expert to make you a columnist, I've had a lot of people I work with that end up in columns in, you know, small to big publications. But certainly exciting kids events that you have coming up, especially the more you link it to 501c3 nonprofit, that's a U.S. term, but I mean, you know, the Canadian equivalent. The more you link it into being a nonprofit, the more it is a community outreach, the better off you are. And especially if you're doing the anti-abduction in the period, whether that's the news right now, of course, the big buzz is bullying and social media bullying and all that stuff. So that certainly, you know, with Robin Williams, the thing is depression and so forth, and how to deal with that. And of course, that's across age barriers. So apparently, with him also, he was had Parkinson's. Anyway, what else did anybody come up with? Any other quick thoughts from thumbing through this?
On page 12, there's a no exercise workout.
Workout. Okay.
Did anybody mention the actual karate listings?
I saw that.
Yeah, right there.
The actual karate listings that are pre-listed.
Get your family moving.
Well, no, there's like on page 24. Martial arts, Colorado Budokan, Tiger Games Academy, Taekwondo, and Tonsido. I don't know if they have to be an advertiser, but it's an actual listing. And they have listings for camps and other things.
Amanda, have you talked to these guys recently from an advertising standpoint?
Probably a couple years ago, but yes, you do have to be here an advertiser and then they list you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you have, sometimes when you have free community events,
event.
Page 60 is Tiger Kim's ad, which for Tiger Kim, that's not a bad ad.
So you're saying that for some of these magazines, occasionally you have to be advertising to get that listing, but there might be other events or other things you can do, and we've all got a whole list of different things you can. You don't have to be from a job, you could be, you know, some kind of self-defense in a specific class. You could be other things that won't seem like it conflicts with other advertisers.
Yeah. And I was looking for the other karate ads. There must be
some other. Page 60, there's one.
Where?
Page 60.
Page 60? Oh, that's the one I just found.
Easton's on page 13.
There's one toward the front.
Page 13?
Yeah, 42. The other thing about these magazines, if you do get in their listing, then, you know, it'll show up online and everything as well.
There's one on page 13, Easton Training Center. It's got a picture of them all in uniform.
Yeah, and also pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Usually advertising a lot of those, depending on the distribution, just like anything.
This is off the topic. This one over the years I've experimented with an awful lot of times. You know, I've done full page, 3 months, 5 months, different times. Never got crap on it. We were doing the same publication in Sacramento, and it was pulling like gangbusters.
The point there is test things to make sure you keep track of what your numbers are, because some of these things can work, but you know, when I tried them, I haven't had much success, like Master Oliver said, but in Sacramento, I guess they do, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I have a tendency to, and this is probably useful, at the very least, if I went into a publication and test it, that would be the minimum ad size I would take, right? So I would prefer, if I was in a publication like this, to be in an ad that was, I don't see any.
While you're looking that up, I make a comment on these things too. You do need, when the rep comes to you and wants to have you pay for that, I never ever pay the prices that they quote.
No,
they come to you first and they say, we'll give you a better deal than is on our rate sheet. And we never want to ever pay that. We just worked a deal out to you. They wanted $2,000, that was discounted for $3,000 for this full page Phoenix wide ad. And my chief of staff negotiated a lower rate. And then I always tell her, okay, cut that in half and ask them again, and they give her the rate.
Last time I advertised in this publication, the sales rep had such a difficult conversation. Look, I've advertised your publication 3 different times. I swung for the fences, got nothing. Forget it. And finally, she brought the manager down, and I said, I'll give you $100 a call. Take it or leave it. And so they ran us for like 4 months at the $100 a call. I paid them, you know, $100 for 4 months or something like that. And didn't do it anymore. It didn't work, but, you know. And he said, well, how do I said, look, I'll give you the best ad that we have that I know has worked in other places, and I'll keep track. And, you know, if it makes you feel better, you know, I'll double the number that we come in and, you know, give you $200 per call that we report, right? So you know we're not going to hide them. And if you want to, you know, if you want to secret shop for us a couple times, knock yourself out, right? And it still didn't work, right? So, but see, I don't like any of these ads. You know why I don't? Because there's four ads on the same page and people read things for editorial, right? But I like this ad because it's
stands out.
It's still a half page, but it's a half page vertical on a page with no editorial, right? So what would you rather have? Their half page ad or their half page ad, right? And so I'd much rather have that half page ad, and the best place to be in the magazine is either right here, right, page three, or back cover, or inside back cover. Why do I say inside back cover? Well, most people, when they pick up a publication like this, myself included, they don't read it this way. They pick it up and they thrum through it this way, right? So, you know, I pick up a magazine, I have a tendency to go like this, and what's the first thing I'm going to see? Back, inside, cover, both sides, right? So this is prime real estate. In most of the TV guide advertising I did over the year, we were always working for page three, and there was some massive advertiser that locked it up for like 50 months a year. So I would be in page five, and then whenever they weren't there, I had first dibs on page three, right? And in fact, I told them if they ever go away, just, you know, lock me in for the year. And that was big bucks. I mean, we were paying $1,500 a week or something like that, but it was working then, wouldn't work now. To get the idea of looking through this, you know, I haven't heard a lot of stuff mentioned, but I could walk through this and come up with 22 different things. There's a bunch of people in the back who do birthday parties. I can do all kinds of win-win with people who do birthday parties to give them other free gifts and things and have a Ninja Turtle or a Power Ranger come to the party. I can have a karate instructor come to the party. If they're a small deal, I could have guest passes and stuff going out to all their people with the $200 value or some type of thing. Hop, skip, and jump start, some other type of event here. A 5K. You can do all kinds of booths and stuff with the 5K runs. Great for the adult market, great for the kids market. Again, big event, lots of kids. Lakewood Recreation, they have a special event going on there. Taste of Colorado, Taste of Wherever, those are huge events. The only thing you've got to be aware of with that is not going in some place where 90% of the prospects aren't going to live geographically where you want to be. You've got to be aware of that. Look at that listing, a very fair and festival coming up. And it's not every, but a bunch of fairs and festivals coming up. Probably all of them I can figure out something to do with them if they're right geography.
54, Farmers Market.
Yep, Farmers Market is a good one to do a booth and to be there. Lyle the Crocodile, Arvada Center Theater. So this is an actual kids-oriented play based upon a kid's book. That'd be a great place to have something going on and co-promote with them or something like that. Let's see. Human X Academy, a lot of private schools of various sorts for tutoring and so forth. All of them are people you can do things with, right? See, the main point of this is you've got to be constantly open to, well, where are their opportunities, right? What other businesses, what other institutions, what other places, people, event are things that would be useful for me, right? And you start always internal, and then you get out of your school and walk the sidewalk and then walk the block and then walk the community. And I can't tell me how many times over the years I've shown up at a school, somebody says I can't figure out how to get enough students. I say, well, where's the community center? Don't know. Well, where are the local, you know, kids mark, where are the local elementary schools? I don't know. What's the biggest church in the area? I don't know. Well, how many big churches are there in the area? I don't know, right? What do? They just sit there at their desk, and they buy a Valpak ad, and they think that people are going to flood to them. Well, it's not what happens, right?
So you've got to get out in the community and get your filters off. And again, walk around the block in different ways, drive to the school differently every time, watch for banners, pick up this stuff. A lot of this kind of stuff is now online, right? So it makes it a ton easier. But you go to the Chamber of Commerce website, see what they have. You go to the local city website, see what they have. You again, monitor Troll, pay attention to all the big schools, monitor Troll, all of the schools in the area, monitor and Troll what the Kiwanis and the Key Club and all our JCs, what all those guys are doing. You pay attention to what the rec centers are doing. You watch for all the 5K runs, the 10K runs, all that kind of thing. And there's an unlimited number of opportunities. If I want to get to 30-year-old men, there's a bunch of places that they hang out. There's different events and activities they go to. There's fairs that may not be directly targeted at them, but where they're going to show up. A lot of the live events, you have to sort through broke people to get to the good ones, but there are also live events that target it more upscale, right? In Sacramento, or not even in Fresno, they started coming up with going to the home improvement shows. So you got the family tugging the kids through, and the kids are bored, need something to do, and mom's looking for a new Wolf range, right? We're looking for a Sub-Zero refrigerator, or looking to put granite countertops. Obviously, they got money burning a hole in their pocket, either borrowing it or investing it to do all that kind of stuff, right? So there's a lot of places where just the person who's going there is going to have enough disposable income that might be useful. Does that make sense? Okay. And then when you find these things, what do you want to get to happen? Is your goal is to get an enrollment, right? And in order to get an enrollment as quickly as possible, you need to get a lead. And I'm defining a lead as at least you have a name, email, and phone number, and preferably you have mailing address, right? And a hot lead or a warm lead is somebody who has raised their hand and expressed some interest, right? Not just a suspect is, you get a compiled list, you know they live over there, you know they have the right income, you know that they're a certain age or that they have kids in the household, whatever, right? But a hot lead is they came by the booth and they were interested and they were talking to you in one thing or another, or they in some way, shape, or form came into the school or came into a birthday party or something like that. So you want to get an enrollment. In order to get an enrollment, you've always got to end up with a hot lead. And if you're at a live event, your mission at best case is to get a paid intro, right? And I've seen a few people. I got somebody one time, Linda, I think it was, to go do like a $99 intro at a fair. She signed up like 45 people on a $99 deal. The $99, by the time you got 45 of them, amortized the cost of being there and all the stuff they did. But then you've got the same dynamic as they're more likely to show up, right, because they pay for something. But at the very least, but your goal is to get, best case, a paid intro, worst case, an appointment. And then your fallback from there is to at least get a lead, right? Now, what we're finding at events is it's typically like 80-20 ratio, meaning 80% of the people we interact with, we can get them to make an appointment. 20% of the people we interact with, we get contact information, but we just can't push them enough to make a firm appointment on the spot, right? So if you go to an event, again, that's what I was talking to them about earlier. You go to an event, you get 100 leads and 20 appointments, that means you need to work on the scripting and the interaction. If you go to a thing and you get 100 leads and 80 of them made an appointment, you're doing really damn well, right? But you're better off to make an appointment then and there rather than end up with a follow-up mechanism and try to track them down, right? Now, doesn't mean you don't have to do all the same stuff. You get an appointment, what do you have to do? Mail them a postcard, send them a text, send them an email, send them a broadcast voicemail, call them live on the phone, confirm one thing or another. You have to do all the same stuff to make sure they show up. But you're one step closer than having to also get the appointment, right? Now, what you don't want to do with this stuff is just end up we went to the events, we passed out flyers. I don't think I told you this story today, but I was speaking at one of YK Kim's events, and there was this very nice Korean gentleman that was also speaking at the same time slot.
we had never met each other before, but he started, he was talking, and somewhere along the line, he had a very successful school in Chicago, but somewhere along the line, he said, for his traditional Hapkido school, he was enrolling 54 people a month on a consistent basis. I think you were there. And I'm watching the audience, and they're asking questions, and they all started asking technical questions about how he was doing Hapkido and what he was doing, one thing or another. And, of course, me being kind of subtle and polite, I said, okay, you guys all want to be pros. And they all looked at me like, who the hell are you? And he looked at me and goes, oh, you're the other speaker. Yeah, good speech. Okay. And I said, you guys all want to be broke. Because he just said he's consistently doing 54 new Hapkido students in a school, and you're charging what? Oh, you're charging $178 a month. That's pretty good. I want to know how he's consistently doing $52 a month, you know, 52 enrollments a month. And you guys want to know all this stupid Hapkido shit. So, you know, I'm just going to ask, you know, what is it you're doing to generate 52 enrollments a month? He goes, oh, we just do flyers. You remember this? Oh, we just do flyers. And I said, okay, well, do you have one of them with you? Yeah. And I looked at it, and I got to think, oh, very good. Right? I said, okay, so that's the flyer. Okay. How many of these flyers do you pass out a month to get 52 enrollments a month? His number was 100,000. So every month, you do 100,000 flyers. And so every month, 100,000 flyers turns into 52 enrollments. Now, that ratio is about right. And I can tell you what, I could have improved the flyer a lot. I probably could have doubled his response rate from the flyer. But what was he doing that hardly anybody else ever does? Getting 100,000 flyers out of a month, right? He was working his butt off to do the traffic. And so you don't want to line up a live event and all you do is you have a bunch of kids out there passing out flyers, right? Ultimately, you want to get appointments or you want to get paid appointments. But you want to look at all this stuff. And some of it is the best you can pull off is you're going to put your flyer in every bag. Okay, well, that's better than nothing, right? Other things you can pull off, they'll put your flyer in the bag, and they'll send an email out to the participation list. Okay, that's better. They'll give you the mailing list for the participation list, the phone number list for the participation list. They'll send an email out to the list for you. And in the mailer they send for the registrations for the 5K run, they'll send your guest pass with it. That's even better, right? Or they'll make you the main prize for the winner, the secondary, third prizes, you'll give them something for that. They'll do all that other stuff, and now you'll have a big booth at the end, and you'll be able to do registrations. And with their 5K run registration, they also get a free month pass and a lesson, which is $100 value. We're getting there, right? And then they'll do all that stuff, but they'll funnel them through to you so you can schedule appointments for the thing. Even better. They'll give you the attendee list ahead of time so you can send an email or voicemail directing them back to you to make an appointment ahead of time to take advantage of it even better, right? Now you can do, it's a charitable fundraiser, so now you have a $47 or a $27 thing. 100% of it goes to the MS Society because that's a fundraiser for the 5K. All the participants come, and if they decide to, they give you $27. You give it to the MS as a donation for the 5K run. You register them for a 5-week pass or a 4-week pass for lessons, even better, right? And that's a pretty low threshold, by the way, to get a paid intro, is you're at a charity event and they pay you the $27 that goes 100% to the charity. That's great, right? I always made it where they write out a check made payable directly to the charity, so there's no intermediate. I never touch the money, right? Nowadays, it's a debit card and you've got to sort it through to them. But you see how you can incrementally, you keep expanding what you can do with it, right? And in a lot of this stuff, it's a charity event, or it's a business that has your customer list. What's the business interested in? Mostly they're interested in having more customers for their business, right? I get people pitch me all the time. Sell this, you know, I went to the U.S. Open, I did broadcast voicemail, and everybody wants me to sell shit to NAPA members. Showed up and wanted to take me to lunch, dinner, or whatever, right? And I get that all the time. You know, you sell this thing, it's $20, you keep 10. I don't care about that, right? On the other hand, if they've got a good list, and they can sort out the quality from the bad, and they can refer, honestly, people to me for the ones that need, then I'm happy, right? So the dentist, the orthodontist, what does he want in most cases? More orthodontist patients, right? The private school, what do they want? They want their kids to be happier and have more success, and they want more of those students. So these events, what do they want? More people to show up at the event and more different booths and activities and demos and stuff to attract people to come back next time, right? So if you get into the mind of what it is they want, and you provide it to them in any way that's possible for you to provide it to, you create a win-win activity, right? But just saying I'm going to give you $100 for everybody we enroll from the thing, that's okay. If they get excited about it, sometimes it can even be good. I heard somebody did something, was it Eric and Hyde, were you guys the one that was doing the waitresses were selling the passes or something like that? There was somebody who was having the waitress in the thing were selling a pass, and it was like the waitress got half and the restaurant got half or the charity got half, I forgot. So if you can get something like that to work out, it's fine. But I'm telling you, most of the time, if you're going into a business, what they want is to grow their business. And so if I can show them how I'm going to help them grow their business, they're happy to help me grow their business, right?
When you hold a booth, how many should you have there?
You know, how many human beings?
How many human beings, like, to enroll to make the appointments? We run booths all the time with a spinning wheel.
Yeah.
With we get all the lead information, yeah. Right? But we don't tend to make appointments because usually there's a lineup.
Right.
So we're
you may need just one more person.
Right.
Really, usually it's collect the leads, spin the wheel, make the appointment, come collect the price.
Right.
Right.
Just a more of a specific system as to how it plays out.
Well, the right answer is it depends on how many people are there, right? We were at the Scout Show Jamboree and we had 12 people there. But there's 50,000 Boy Scouts that were going to be there for 3 hours, right? On the other hand, we've had booths that ran fine with one person there because there's a trickle, not a flood, right? So if you're at a point of overwhelm, what you knew is you need one more person probably, right? But you do have to have it built in the system. They give you the lead, they spend for the prize, they have to come to the school to pick up the prize, so I schedule an appointment to do that. By the way, you get your 2 free weeks, whatever, right? So I've got to make sure I've got it a clear, simple system. Because especially if you delegate it, right? Once you delegate, the pieces fall through the cracks. You know what the first thing is that falls through the cracks? The making the appointment. Second thing that falls through the cracks is the collecting the stuff, right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden people are coming and spinning the wheel, getting a prize, and they say, yeah, I'll call the school and you can come get it.
They have to fill out the form.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, you know, the principles, we said the principles don't change, but the media changes.
Yeah.
But this is like what we said for the webpage. They do the opt-in form, then they email a phone number. Like
exactly.
Then maybe they set the appointment. Then maybe they pay the money for the intro. So it's the same exact process, and it just needs to be followed in that order. If we try to, the other thing I was going to mention is flyers. So many things we do, like birthday parties. At the end of the birthday party, give a free pass. That's no different than just handing out a flyer.
Yeah.
It's a little better, but not that much better. You know, birthday parties, the same thing. We need to set up companies. And we can go in more detail on that or whatever other ones you want.
Oh, absolutely.
There's some nuances. But.
Well, and something like that, I mean, again, it's the principle is important because there's 1,000 different variations of this. But birthday party, if you get the list ahead of time and you're offering to send the invitations, then you can mail to them, call them, email to them ahead of the party, and at the very least, you catch the parents on the way in when they're dropping the kids off and make an appointment. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been marketing kids programs for years without having kids, but, you know, now that my daughter's 13, my son is 6, I analyze every place we go based upon the competency of their business, right? And occasionally it embarrasses my kids, but now Jada does it before I do. So, you know, we'll drive down the streets and go, why don't they do that? Or, that's really smart. Why don't the karate schools do that? It's cute.
Good job.
I keep telling her she's taking over the company. She's the math nerd who thinks she wants to, you know, be in social welfare or something like that. And I'm just going to reframe her that is what teaching kids in martial arts is it's helping lots of other people at a much broader scale, but not be poor in the process. But she's lived a very charmed life. Last year she went to Paris and London, and next year it's Ireland. And so, you know, there's that cognitive dissonance of teenagers of lifestyle expectations and outreach expectations, and they've got to learn that both of them work together, but not in that venue, right? What you've got to be thinking of in all contexts is how do you immediately make the appointment, get the contact information, and the point I was making on the birthday parties with the kids is there's a bunch of different national franchises. There's the Bounty House thing, one thing or another, and
I've seen a bunch of them that have a really good system in place that falls apart at the point of contact. And what I mean by this, there was one, it's a national franchise, the Bounty House thing. There's another one that's called Jungle Quest or something, where they go in and they do like these zip lines and so forth. And so now we get the mailer from the mom, hand address from her. It's their piece. It's full color. It has the place where you fill out all your contact information. It has a free offer, but it has the liability waiver. And it's designed for when you show up for the birthday party, you give it to the front desk as your pass to get into party room A to go to the party. You know what has yet to happen? The person at the front desk actually collected it from you. 20 different places they put a 16-year-old bimbo at the front desk who goes, it's that way. And they have yet to collect it. And the best I've seen yet is that they had a sheet of paper they made their old parents sign as like the generalized liability waiver, but they never actually collected the data. Okay? Now, what should they be doing? That point of contact at the front desk is a Herculean importance. They should know how many people are going to be in parties today. They should have a choke point to know that they collected that many leads. They should have a choke point to know that they all got data entered. And by the way, what's an important thing they should be doing with all those leads no matter what the venue is? They should be soliciting everyone who went to that party to do a party there of their own. Because what I've noticed is all the kids, and Jay has been in three schools now, every school, there's like five places they all rotate parties, right? So they'll go to, you know, to Carol's party, and then they go to Al's party, and then they'll go to Carol's place again because all the girls like the gymnastics place, and then they'll go to the Bouncy House place again. And what happens is once they get exposed, it just cycles around, right? And I've yet to have a gymnastics school that solicited her to do gymnastics lessons. I've yet to have a dance school that solicited her or I to do dance lessons. And I've rarely had the place that are just birthday party centric, including Chuck E. Cheese, ever get anything in the mail or email, anything else, soliciting to do a birthday party, in part because they didn't collect the damn information. Right? Because it fell apart at the front desk with the 16-year-old who was marginally apathetic, who just mostly pointed in the right direction. And made sure the kids weren't being unruly, right? So if you think about that, you've got to be expansive in your thinking about what's going to happen, but you've also got to make sure it doesn't fall apart at the most important juncture. Who should be at that front desk?
The owner.
If I was a gymnastics school, I'd have the program director, whoever it is, meeting and greeting everybody who came in. I'd be making sure I got the information. I'd be right there saying, hey, look, all the kids, if they enjoy it today, we've got a pass for the next two free weeks. We've got a beginner tumbling class starting or whatever the hell it is in the gymnastics school. Jada, does that sound fun to you? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, would you like to come Tuesday or Wednesday? I've yet to have any of them do that, right? Because it's not just martial arts schools that are horrible at their business. It's everybody, right? And it's what differentiates successful businesses from other ones, right? When we were at Visible Changes, how different from what was that from like every other hair salon?
There were a lot of differences. Yeah. One of the differences was the staff knew everything about all their numbers.
Right.
And they were reminded as they stepped through the process how they would upsell them on the merchandise, yeah, and the hair salon,
right,
stuff and everything. And the people at the front counter did that, so there was a transition and a handoff.
Right.
So they had everything ready to go. And I mean they it was a machine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was exactly the way it should be. And then the other place down the, what was it, 50 feet away?
Right.
How far away was that other hair salon?
Yeah.
It was completely empty. And I bet you $100. You walk into them, and they go, "Hi, how's it going?"
Yeah.
"Well, I want to get my hair cut." "Oh, okay. Well, come on in." You know, they wouldn't even, you know, like, do Invisible Changes. They had people out there before, if you guys remember, out there. We went there early to maybe see their staff meeting.
Yeah.
And they had their people out there before the mall opened, standing in front of the store, and they had somebody come out and get their information. Because some of them may have been, you know, hope they can get an appointment so they can check them in. So even that part of the process, they managed pretty well.
Right.
I was going to add on to, like, the birthday parties and other stuff. One way, sometimes you get objections. Well, how do I get the parents to fill out the roster or whatever? We always just say, well, for safety and liability purposes, we need to make sure we have all the information before the party. And we give them a nice, we have a checklist we go through when we do a party. We give them a call ahead of time to make sure they know where to come for Johnny's party, they know what to expect, and we also give them,
they also get pretty decent free classes as a gift from you. And by the way, and then we tie the referral program to that. So we tell them all that stuff ahead of time. But the key thing is that safety and liability, you should use that everywhere. We need that information for safety and liability purposes. You know, like your school when you give a permission slip. We need to have that for safety and liability purposes. And
my line's always been our insurance company requires us.
Yeah, that's the other way. If they push us, then we say to the insurance company.
By the way, here's the proof of insurance. We already have you as an additional insured. I mean, go in, write an additional insured deal. You can't, Katie, just go on their website. And so I always have the school district, and if they want the individual school, but the district adequate. And so here's the proof of an additional insured. However, our insurance company requires that we get permission slip ahead of time, so we have that data on the way.
Yeah, don't give up on that, because you don't want your event to whatever it is, event or party or whatever,
yeah,
to degenerate into the level of handing out flyers.
No.
It should all be based on the full process. And if one objection some of my guys says, well, you got a party with 30 kids, and oh my God, you know, there's so many kids, how do I?
I'm overwhelmed.
I've got to register every kid. And we also tell them they have to personally bring their parent in, we're talking to the parent. You personally have to bring your kid in. We can't have batches of kids coming in with a birthday mom. And we tell the birthday mom that too, because otherwise the birthday mom will bring in any kids and you don't connect to the parent. So we require the parent comes in, and we tell them straight up, if the parent doesn't bring them, we can't have them take the class.
Yeah, we need the parent to sign the liability on the way in. We need them to check them in.
And then when they check them in, we ask them for the appointment before. We ask them when they check out. We require them to check them in and check them out. Again, for safety and liability purposes, it's required. They have to do that. And occasionally we'll get a kid that comes in without a parent, and we just deal with it. We manage it. But they rarely, they understand when you tell them that kind of thing.
That's great to know how to follow up, you know, get ahead of time. Is there something that you do during the party that really helps convert?
Well, the party helps convert itself. I mean, one thing we could go through. I mean, do you want to go through parties in detail, or is that something we have on the web? Because we could go through.
I believe we have on that website that ultimate referral idea. If it's not on the website, we have it in a digital form. We give it to everybody, and it's exactly the same thing except for the based on the pizza party thing, not the birthday party. And the advantage of the pizza party. Hi, let me steal you away and Jan and Master Minton to head off with Master Smith for a few minutes. They're going to go do a little cadet tour of the Air Force Academy and come back and report to us after lunch. We ended up with a maximum of four people who could go with Sophie and get the behind the scenes. So they're going to go do a little reconnaissance tour for us. And then when we get back to lunch, they'll be about getting back and give us
the keys for the
kids over here.
Hey, Jeff, would you do me two favors? Would you put my sunglasses in there so I don't lose them up on that blue bag? And
put them on your blue bag right now.
Yeah, just put them on the. Keep in mind, you're driving my ex-wife's car, so, you know, there's enough layers of grief available without there being any additional layers.
At least
she
should be your ex.
I don't think that makes it better.
Yeah, that doesn't enhance the opportunities for...
Yeah, but as far as the birthday party, what we're doing that, as far as the birthday party stuff goes, I mean, all the systems are, principles are pretty much the same. We want to have contact with parents. We have a reason to have contact because safety and liability purposes, whether that's at a school, we give them permission slips so the parent signs it. That's the least beneficial. The best is if they're physically there. And so when they're physically there at the party, we also make sure that they check them in and check them out. When we ask them to come back, a lot of times they'll leave during the party. We ask them to stay for the party if they can. We also ask them to come back. We have a special deal we do about 15 minutes before the end on the floor. They break the board and stuff. So we do stuff to try to make sure they see the martial arts stuff. They don't just see us cutting cake or being goofy. And our parties they're a lot of fun, but they're also martial arts. They don't play games, but they're martial arts. So they're not like goofing around and the parent, you know, thinks, oh, this is like him going to the bouncy house thing. We want to make sure it's different. So, but I think we have a lot on the web. I hate to spend extra time. We can detail anything you think we need to.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a fun first intro and have cake. Right, so I mean, if you're really good at teaching an exciting small group first intro, You tag that in to sing happy birthday, have cake and pizza, and you're in good shape. And, you know, having done thousands of these with my own kids now, they're usually like it's an hour and an hour, or it can be 45 minutes and an hour. And what I mean by that is they come in and they go do the stuff. You go to Chuck E. Cheese, they go play with the machines, and then the pizza shows up, and they have a time down to the nanosecond, right? Then you got 45 minutes to eat your pizza and eat your cake, and then Chuck E. comes out and does this, and they leave, right? So you know, it's that format is working just fine for pretty much everybody else. So 30, 45 minutes, which is intro plus they play some games, and then they sing happy birthday, do the cake, do the pizza, and then they go home, right? And you just want to make sure the karate, that it doesn't deviate to become... See, a lot of our guys would get bored of doing the martial arts stuff, and then all of a sudden they're doing unrelated games and all kinds of stuff, just trying to entertain the kids. And it loses the point. You know, Frank was doing that. It's like, it loses the point of what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to get them excited about martial arts, not about, like, tumbling, right? So, you know, fine to do relay races, but I'd rather it be either doing front kicks back down the floor or tumbling, you know, or doing break falls or whatever the heck it is you do, not doing something unrelated to martial arts. So, yeah.
Let me add a couple things onto that, a couple key points, though. I think that's really critical. What I found some of my instructors doing in that was I'd be there, they're doing the parties, we're having all these, and I see the kids running around being goofy. And I went out and I asked him, why are they running around being goofy? And he didn't really understand, because he would teach our regular classes. And when you have a regular class, you've got, you know, 20 kids and maybe one or two new ones every class. So the one or two new ones are around 18 other ones that are always disciplined and saying yes, sir, and doing all the things that we do. So it was sort of tribal knowledge that the other kids would have complied. Whereas a birthday party, there's one kid that knows what we do, and then 20 other kids don't know what we do.
So they're on a sugar high.
Yeah, well, you have to pay for sure, but I mean, they come in and they're jumping around the floor, they're not taking their shoes. When we check them in, we tell the kid what to do, where to sit, how to be. You have to realize when you do birthday parties, they're very successful if you do them like martial arts. If they degenerate the play time, then it's not worth $300 a month or $500 a month. $500 a month isn't for play time. You can go somewhere else and do that. So the instructors need to realize that when you do a party, you have to include part of, as Master Oliver says, the intro lesson. Part of the intro lesson is how we stand, how we sit, how we're martial. And then that makes the party go really well. So it's all consistent and congruent. You ask for the appointment, you check them in, and then we put a belt on them with their names, so now we know their name. That gives them extra value. Sometimes we've given them full uniforms. Yeah. That's just a little bit of a hassle more than a cost thing, because they convert a little better if you give them uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
Stocking the uniforms and getting all the sizes and doing all that just ends up being a hassle. But we'll take the time. If there's 40 kids at a party, there'll be a line.
Or you can do a school T-shirt and have them go.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. I like the belt because their names are on it, and it's easy. We buy size 6 belts and cut them. And they're lined up, they're stacked, just like we have for regular class. We teach them how to stand and sit and all that. All that stuff happens before so that the class becomes good. And once I told my instructors, what are you doing? Do it like we normally do it with a new person. They go, oh, I'm allowed to do that? See, when people kind of shift to this birthday party thing, they think it's different. It's not different. And in a sense, that's the most ethical way to
enroll. Exactly. It's an introductory class.
Yeah, because now you're saying, now sign up for this thing and do it a bunch. So it shouldn't be really different.
In general terms, is there anybody in the room that hasn't seen Enter the Dragon? It's the 50.
You haven't seen Enter the Dragon?
Oh. How can you call yourself a martial artist? Oh.
He's got to see it tonight.
Yeah. They're re-releasing it at the 50-year anniversary or something like that. It's 80, 90, 2000. Yeah, it's the 50-year anniversary. Was it the 50-year anniversary it was 50-year anniversary of Enter the Dragon, and it's 50-year anniversary of Bruce Lee's death, which is within a year or so of each other. So, yeah. It's
40?
40. Is it 40? It's 80, 90, 2000. Yeah, 40-year anniversary. You're right. So it'd be the 40-year anniversary. He died in, 73, so last year would have been the 40-year anniversary of his death, right? And Enter the Dragon was 74, so this would be the 40-year. But the opening scene on the island, and all of the mostly drunk extras in wet uniforms because they hadn't been dried, with all their belts tied wrong. Jackie Chan was one of them, by the way. Out there doing That's what most people expect to see when they come into the martial arts school, right? There's 500 all in line, all in uniform. It's the opening of the Seoul Olympics when they did the Taekwondo demonstration. So if you now have them all running off in all different directions, then it's not uniform, right? And it's, again, where MMA schools and cross schools have a tendency to screw this up. There's all of a sudden they think they just want to be in fitness, and they want to wear whatever they want to wear, and they don't want uniformity, they don't want discipline. Well, they want all of that stuff, right? I mean, freaking Krav is Israeli military. Are they wearing uniforms and disciplined and stuff, you know, more or less than the Israeli military than, like, you know, normal society, right? So that's the cool factor, right? So if you eliminate the cool factor and you become too informal and you eliminate the uniforms, you eliminate the discipline and all that stuff, you eliminated what's going to attract them to us rather than some other activity, right? So you've got to keep that in mind in all cases. We're going to be breaking for lunch quickly. We should do it a little bit earlier than yesterday because if somebody wants to go to the buffet, they shut it down at 2, right? That was new information yesterday. We just made it under the wire, which I think yesterday for the buffet, I eat enough for the next 7 days. I kind of the chipmunk storing it up. And then I was a bad influence on you, and Matt Smith was a bad influence on me because we did like 3 trips to the dessert bar. Oh, we ate about, you know, a pound and a half of steak each and then went to the dessert bar.
We didn't eat dinner.
What?
We didn't eat dinner.
Unless you call a jalapeno stuffed, a cheese stuffed pretzel and a hot dog loaded with jalapenos, not eat, which is what I had, or a full pizza and a pretzel and half a thing of popcorn, which is what Jeff had. We didn't eat dinner. We went to see The Expendables last night. It was a really good action movie, and I liked the second one better. Because
right.
The second one, they didn't take themselves too seriously, and they had all the jokes about, right, you know, the previous roles. The only joke about previous roles that I caught in this one was Wesley Snipes. You know, because they started out busting him out of jail and say, what was he in jail for? Tax evasion. He just got out of jail for tax evasion. But other than that, but it was really good. I mean, it was, you know, if you like helicopters and blowing a lot of stuff up. And who's the MMA fighter? Rousey?
Yeah, Ronda Rousey.
She was really good.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised. She was really good in it.
She actually had lines.
Yeah, she did. You know, it's a lot of times there's what, 3 or 4 pretty famous MMA fighters in that cast now, right? Well, is everybody in the world? Yeah, Chuck wasn't in this one.
Right.
You know, they didn't have Chuck Van Damme or Seagal.
It's Statham.
That's right. He's good. But no, it was good. The last one was funnier. This one was pretty good though.
Right.
But anyway, for our break for lunch, when we get back from lunch, one of the things we're going to do is work together on small groups, on doing the business plan, the marketing plan for the fall. There's a lot of topics that we haven't answered every question or dealt in perhaps far enough, and I want to make sure for things that we've covered, you have enough clarity to do action rather than just awareness, right? So be real good at lunch on the notebook on what isn't clear, right? The second thing is get an open mind and take notes on, mentally draw the radius around your circle around your school. What are community outreach things that are available for you that you haven't even tapped into or thought about before, right? So get really good about thinking about that and let it sink in for lunch. Like yesterday, we slotted it for 90 minutes, but this is the first time I've been in a hotel where they weren't backed up for an hour in the kitchen. Can we start again at 2:30? Is that a good enough time around?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do 2:30. But be thinking about those two things over lunch so we can make sure we're at maximum effectiveness.